Well, welcome. I see some familiar faces that were with me this morning for the TMD lecture. So if I say any jokes, again, that were from this morning, you must laugh. Okay, that's part of the admission price for coming in to a second lecture with me. If I speak too fast today, yes, here you are again, so don't ask all the questions again. You get one, that's it. One question from you. Game your limit. I will probably not take a lot of questions, actually. With this many people, if I start asking questions, we'll get through about 30 slides and we'll be done. And for those of you who are with me this morning, I speak 1,000 miles an hour, and we barely finished in 2.5 hours. So we will try to do the best we can. Again, this is being recorded, and so I think you can buy the recording. I gave them my slides. At the end, if you want me to send you the slides, like via email, I've got some little pieces of paper up here you can fill out with your email address. You could also just put your business card up here if it's got your email address on it, and I can get it to you that way. Little introduction, and those that were with me this morning saw this already. I'm from Idaho. I always put this up for those who are maybe be from the East Coast that don't know that Idaho exists. I do a lot at Tufts, and they have no idea that there is such a place, but a lot of you know this place because you probably have already bought property in Idaho for when you retire from being in California, right? Everyone I know from in Idaho is from California. This is my family, the wife and the 6 kids there. That's us down in Bryce Canyon. Here we are at Lake Powell. So we spend a lot of time on the water in the summer. This is me skiing. This is a glove and a pole and another glove, and that's a lot of powder snow. For those of you skiers, that's just a couple hours from my house in Boise. This is our practice, Craniofacial Pain Center of Idaho, and the one in Colorado, and recently changed the name of our center to the Center for Sleep Apnea and TMJ. I coined the term, well, I didn't coin the term, excuse me, but I named the practice the Craniofacial Pain Center about 10 years ago, and that was to, you know, make it all sophisticated and stuff. And after about a decade, I realized that nobody knew what craniofacial pain was. Okay, and especially the sleep apnea patients that would come and see me, they didn't really like the idea of coming to a place that had pain in the title of where I worked. So I decided, you know what, to heck with it. I'm just going to call it Center for Sleep Apnea and TMJ, because all the medical doctors who would refer their TMJ patients to me called it TMJ anyway. So why fight it? So I just, that's the name of my practice now. It's all I do. It's all I've ever done. So I went right out of school into a TMD limited practice. And TMD and sleep is all I do. All I've ever done. I teach at Boise State, and I actually can prove that. I have one of my past students here in the second row. This is one of the times that you feel old, is one of my college students who also worked for me for several years is here on the second row. And if you don't mind standing up, I introduce you to Dr. Wade Banner, who graduated yesterday. Let's have out a hand there. So how's that? Anybody else in here that graduated yesterday? That's impressive, to be going to CE courses the day after you graduate. Most of you don't even remember the week after you graduated, did you? Okay, yeah. I am faculty at Tufts University. Where's my AV guy? Getting a lot of buzz. You hear that? It's going to drive me a little batty if we have that. Hold on. Do you think that's from this feed, or what do you think that's from?
That's from that feed. Yeah,
that's it. I wonder if we're... It's just a couple slides, so let's see if maybe it's just because we're too hot or something. Okay. And then
I'll
I can...
Well,
I'll play that first one with the video, and if I get this buzz, I can just pull it out and put it in, too. All right, I'm at Tufts. Oh, here's the video right here. I'm at Tufts University. Let me mention this, though. Today's a tease. I can't tell you otherwise. 2.5 hours on this subject is a tease. Okay? It'll be a pretty good tease. I'm going to convince you by the end of this that you all have sleep apnea. Guaranteed. Everyone you know has sleep apnea. Your kids have sleep apnea. By the end of this, you will all think that. What I won't do is tell you what to do about it, how to treat it, how to fit oral appliances, stuff like that. So when you want to go to the next level, which you all will, there is a course that we do up in Boise, which is easy travel for you. There's direct flights from LA, direct flights from San Francisco. This would be kind of a jump in the pool course. There is a full out immersion course through Tufts in Boston. And it's 3 sessions, 3 days apiece. Okay, so 9 days, it's a mini residency at Tufts University. We have some of the world's most renowned experts in sleep as part of this program because we're right there in Boston, so we get them in from Harvard and Brigham and Women's and stuff like that. So if you're interested in that, you can get a hold of me too. All right, let's get started here. So let's see if our audio works. So this is a dramatization of a sleep apnea event. It's put together by a company called WatchPath that makes a home testing device. This guy, though, happens to look a lot like my dad. My dad passed away this last year, but about 8 years prior to that, my mom had passed away about 5 or 6 years before that. Dad decided that he was going to take a drive down to Utah, okay, from Boise down to Salt Lake. It's about a six-hour drive. He was in his early 70s, about 72, 73 years old, and again decides he's going to take this trip. And me and my brother and my sisters are like, Dad, that's a bad idea. You know, we don't want you really driving down here by yourself. We'll fly you down. We'll have somebody go with you. And my dad, you know, true to most 70-year-old, says, to hell with you kids. I do what I want. I'm making the drive. So he gets in his Buick LeSabre, which all 70-year-old dudes drive, I think. And he heads down to Utah. He gets about an hour and a half outside of Boise to a little town called Twin Falls. And he's feeling a little tired. So he stops at a gas station, he gets a Dr. Pepper, he drinks the Dr. Pepper, walks around the car a couple times, gets back in the car, gets on the freeway. About 10 miles later, he falls asleep at the wheel, rolls his Buick down the middle of the road about 4 times. Terrible head laceration, would have died, would have bled out, but people got there quickly, administered first aid, they pick him up in the ambulance, they life flight him back to Boise's in intensive care for a week. As they tried to extubate him, his O2 sats kept dropping every time they try to take him off the ventilator. And eventually they call in the pulmonologist to get a little bit of a feel for what's going on. And the pulmonologist asks him some questions about sleep apnea. And he answers on the little tablets. He's got a tube down his throat so he can't talk. So he says, you know, she says, do you snore? Yes, I snore. Do you think you may have sleep apnea? They extubate him, get him in a sleep study. What you saw this gentleman do, he did 81 times per hour. Okay, AHI, which I'll define in a minute, of 81. Now, interestingly, Dad, to his final day, though, thought that he didn't have sleep apnea. You know why? Because there was a brochure in the sleep doctor's office that had all the symptoms that people have who have sleep apnea, and there were 2 or 3 of those symptoms that he didn't have. So, therefore, he didn't have it. Okay, that gives a little insight on our patients. Can we make something and we don't expect them to think that you have to have all 12 symptoms to have that problem, but that's what my dad thought, is because he woke up feeling okay in the morning, he didn't have sleep apnea, but he had pretty bad sleep apnea. All right, I'm going to take this out and put it in when I need to. All right, I like starting my lectures with this slide here. This is from a study called the Wisconsin Sleep Cohort. This is a group of patients in this part of the study that's being reported here that were diagnosed with sleep apnea and were not treated. Now, it wasn't they were selected to not be treated, that'd be unethical, but they chose not to be treated. Maybe they started treatment very briefly and quit. And we're following these people now. When this was published in 2008, they'd been following them for 18 years. What we see here is 100% of the people in the study were alive when the study started. That makes sense. And then this mortality is how many have died. What percentage are dead? AHI less than 5 is considered normal in an adult. AHI of 5 to 15 is mild. This is moderate, and this is severe. So 18 years out, those with sort of normal, about 4-5% had passed away. Those with mild sleep apnea, about doubles. Those with moderate, about doubles again. But look at this. AHI greater than 30, about 43% of the people who started died within 18 years. 43%. What did I say my dad's AHI was? 81. So AHI over 30, and these people were dead. Well, here's kind of the scary part is we don't know who these people are. I can't go around today and go, that's probably you. You probably have severe sleep apnea, but you probably don't, and you do, and you might, and you probably don't. Can't do that. So who are all these people that have this disease that's killing them? One you may have heard of is a guy named James Gandolfini who died a few months ago, directly related to sleep apnea. But these are people that are showing up in your chairs every day. These are people that you are treating. Okay? I believe that dentistry should be the number one profession referring patients to sleep doctors, bar none. Who spends more time looking at the airway than we do? Nobody. If you think ENT, you're wrong. ENTs look at the airway, but we see more people than they do on a more regular basis. How many of you in this room have been to an ENT in the last year? A couple of you. How many of you have seen a dentist, at least in the mirror or in the hall? A lot, right? Okay, so we see these patients. We see their airways. And by the end of this, my goal here is so that you can recognize this problem and then refer them to a sleep doctor for consideration of evaluation. That's our goal for the next 2.5 hours. Because these are people that are around in our communities. These are people that work for you, and they're married to people who work for you. My office manager's brother-in-law died at 45, directly related to his untreated sleep apnea, leaving a widow and 5 children. That sucks. Can you guys help with that? Uh-huh. Does that mean that you have to treat everyone with an oral appliance? No. If that guy just would have used a CPAP machine, he probably would have been fine. And last but not least, it's you. I want you alive for your kids and grandkids. Okay? I've had a sleep study. How many in here have had a sleep study? A bunch. Good for you. How many of you are being treated? CPAP or oral appliance? Good. Good. Again, hopefully by the end of my lecture, a lot more of you will be interested in getting yourself diagnosed and possibly being treated. And let me make this point right now. A sleep study is one of the few medical tests that I can think of that if you go in to get it, you want the results to be positive, as in you want to have it. If I am treating you for headaches and I send you to an MRI to get an MRI for your headaches, what are your prayers to and from the MRI center? Please, God, don't let it show anything. Right? We're going to spend $2,000-$3,000 for an MRI of the brain, and we hope like crazy it doesn't show anything abnormal. A sleep study, on the other hand, is the other way around. If I send someone for a sleep study and they don't have sleep apnea, I'm super disappointed. And so are they. Because if you have sleep apnea, then maybe it makes sense why you're tired all the time. Maybe it makes sense why you've gained weight and haven't really changed anything. Maybe it makes sense why you have the heartburn. Maybe it makes sense why you have to get up to go to the bathroom 5 times a night. Maybe it makes sense why you have less energy and you've been diagnosed with depression. Maybe it makes sense why the kid is having ADHD problems. Make sense? Whereas if you don't have it, that's like, oh crap, I still don't know why I have all these problems. Okay, so a sleep study is kind of a, when you have the study, you hope you have the problem. Will you come turn down my lavalier just a titch? I feel like I'm yelling at people here. All right, so we're going to cover the basics of normal sleep, and, sleep apnea in adults and kids, diagnosis and treatment, and our role as we go through here. This is a teamwork between medicine and dentistry. Here's some definitions. Apnea is stopping breathing for 10 seconds or more. Hypopnea is a decrease in tidal volume by 30 to 50%. That sounds good, thanks. With a fall in oxygen stat of 4%. An arousal is a shift in brain waves. When we go and get a sleep study, you sleep through the night, and then however many of these events you have, they divide how many total you had by how long you slept, and we get an index. So this index is per hour. So an apnea index would be how many apneas per hour. AHI is the main way that we measure or give a degree of sleep apnea, the AHI. This is a term you'll see all the time. Respiratory-related arousals, a RIRA. The RDI, respiratory disturbance index, is your AHI plus your RIRAs. And sometimes you'll see this term. I mentioned already that normal AHI is less than 5 events per hour in an adult. Okay? In children, an AHI of 1.5 or greater is abnormal. Okay, in adults, 5 or more. In kids, 1.5. But let's think about that 5 or more an hour. Anyone in here have a dog? You got a dog? What would you do if your dog came into your room and woke you up every 15 minutes? What would you do with the dog? Find a different place for him to sleep. That's very kind. Other of you would be not so kind to the dog. Okay, but every 15 minutes would sort of be an AHI of what? Let's do some math this afternoon. It's always fun. 4. Okay, every 15 minutes would be 4 times an hour. So as you think about normal, abnormal, you might consider, wow, if something was sort of screwing up my sleep every 15 minutes, that might be a problem for me. Mild is 5 to 15 events an hour, moderate 16 to 30, and severe is over 30 events an hour. My world record patient, the most severe that I've treated anyway, had an AHI of 118. With the oral appliance, we got it down to 2. The 96 that we got down to 0.4. Okay? So we can treat all levels of sleep apnea. Unfortunately, I also have people with an AHI of 30 that have only been able to take to 20, or 40 that have been able to take to 30. Oxygen sat. Normally, our blood oxygen level should be above 90. Here on the coast, it should be higher. Okay, where I live in Idaho, we're about 2,500 feet, so it's a little bit lower there. And in my Colorado practice, it's lower yet. Okay? So with obstructions and holding your breath, your O2 levels will drop. Who in here does sedation in your office? You do? You do? Your doctor does? Who's a doctor in here that does sedation? Raise your hand. Right here? Okay. So if you had a patient and their O2 sat dropped below 90, what would you do? They'd have to breathe deeper. So they're sedated, though, so what would you do? Oh, it's not IV sedation. Oh, it's oral sedation. Okay. Who does IV sedation? Okay, here we go. What would you do? You would hold their jaw forward. Interesting. So you would try to open their... Would you keep doing what you're doing? Would you keep doing the dental work? Okay. And same as you. You wouldn't necessarily just keep on trucking. You would ask the patient audibly, breathe more. And you'd maybe keep working and you watch for this to rise. For you, you would thrust the jaw a little bit. What if their oxygen level got in the low 80s? Then what would you do? Okay, so you might even start protecting their airway a little bit. Now what if they drop below 80? Okay. Are you a surgeon? You're an oral surgeon. Okay, so you're not immediately calling 911. All right. Most of the rest of us are like, you call 911 is the answer to the question. Right? Is they're about to die. As my southern friends say, they're fixing to die. Okay, so any of us in here, if you have a pulse oximeter on someone's finger and they did this, you would be alarmed. Again, doctor, you're not just like, no big deal. Let me just keep working here. I've seen worse. Okay? They were mostly dead, the ones I saw that were worse, but I've seen worse. We don't do that. People with sleep apnea, their O2 sats can drop like this every night, throughout the night. I saw one patient, his O2 sats dropped into the 30s. Now, pulse oximetry is not accurate in the 30s. It's not accurate below 70, really, but he was making the machine do that. That guy ended up with a trach. He was a thin guy, too. Thin, about my height, probably my weight or less, a music teacher. And he went to Stanford up the road a ways and got a trach to treat his sleep apnea because nothing else worked. Okay? So this stuff happens every night with these patients. Well, let's talk about normal sleep. We have different stages of sleep. The old method was stage 1, 2, 3, and 4. Now it's N, as in non-REM, is where the N comes from. N1, N2, N3, and dream sleep, REM sleep. N1 is transitional phase. N2 is light sleep, or now I call that junk sleep, and I'll explain that in a second. And delta slow wave sleep, or nutritious sleep, my term for that now. And REM sleep. So let's go over each of these. These are brain waves. These were discovered back in the 30s that our brain has this different electrical activity. So this is what we look like when we're awake. This is stage 1. Now, many of you will go into stage 1 sleep during my lecture, okay? Some of you are in stage 2 already, actually. It's a little disturbing to me. Try to keep your sleeping people, wake them up, poke them, do something if there's someone next to you sleeping. That's why I keep the lights on in my lecture, is if I turn them off, then you're all asleep, okay? As entertaining as I try to be, I'm still going to put you to sleep. So stage 1 sleep is just that transitional phase. This is what your brain waves look like in stage 2. Things called sleep spindles and K-complexes. This is deep sleep. Okay, N3, your brain waves look like that. And then this is REM sleep, which looks a lot like awake, because your brain is very active in REM sleep. Okay, now, with that very brief introduction to brain waves, How many of you think you could go into a sleep lab tonight, look over the shoulder of the sleep tech, have the sleep tech say, okay, see right here, that's the brain waves. And you could tell the difference, look at the screen here, you could tell the difference between the person being awake and being in deep sleep. I always have to ask this question to see the intelligence level of the audience. Raise your hand if you think you could tell the difference. All right, I got to talk slower. I'm sorry. I'm not sure we're going to get through all the slides. Okay, for everyone who didn't raise their hand, this is awake. This is deep sleep. Okay, let me ask the question again. How many of you think you could tell the difference between someone being awake and deep sleep? All right, I'll go full speed. All right, good. So the reason I show this too, again, how many have had a sleep study? Weird experience, right? Weird. And some people that have sleep studies are like, I didn't sleep at all. I don't know how they got any information, right? Well, they told you exactly how long you slept, didn't they? They said you slept 5 hours and 27 minutes. You were there, but so they knew exactly how long you slept, and you're like, well, I don't feel I slept. But they can tell, because brain waves can't lie. You can't go get wired up in the sleep lab and be there in bed going like, you know what, I'm going to screw with them. I'm going to do deep... So this is hilarious. It's going to mess with them. Yeah, you can't do that. Okay, so this is not under your control. So we know exactly how long you slept. So light sleep, stage one, about 4 to 5% increases as you get older. This is restful sleep, but again, I'm starting to call this junk sleep because not a lot of good stuff happens in stage two sleep, in N2 sleep. So why I say junk sleep is it's like junk food. So we could all live on a diet of Reese's and Coke if we had to. Okay, some of you do. Okay, but we could, but it's not good for us, right? And if all of a sudden we started getting more nutrition into our diet, started eating more vegetables and fruits and drink water, we'd feel better, wouldn't we? Well, that's how this next one comes, is deep sleep. Deep sleep is nutritional sleep, nutritious sleep. Now, here's some information on our nutritious sleep. This is about 10 to 20% of the total sleep time. Decreases with age. Above 40 to 50% in kids. Why do you think kids would have so much deep sleep? Because they're growing. Everything's developing. Brain's developing. Everything's, they're growing. So they have all this deep sleep. You've all experienced this, right? So how many of you have kids? Okay. You ever had a little kid in like a car seat carrier? That's like in the car. And the kid's asleep. And you get home and you take the car seat carrier and come in, you put them on the kitchen table, and you're like, oh, dirty diaper. Okay, you can take the kid out of the car seat carrier, asleep, change the diaper, change the clothes, kid's asleep the whole time. Okay, try that with your husband sometime. Okay? Good luck. Not gonna happen. Okay? So kids have lots of deep sleep. Now here's the part I don't like about this slide. To total absence by age 40? What the world? That's not cool, especially for a guy who's going to be 45 here in a few months. So deep sleep becomes harder for us to get as we get older. In my morning lecture, I heard some people talking over here about that they didn't sleep well because they don't sleep well in hotels. Okay? How many of you travel with your own pillow? Raise your hand. Okay, even some dudes here. Okay, mostly that's a girl thing. My wife carries her own pillow. It's like half the suitcase is the pillow, right? Like, what the heck? And you all know how that goes. When you travel or things like that, it becomes harder to get a good night's sleep. When you're in college, what? You could like crash on someone's couch or on the floor and boot 4 hours later, go take a final exam, couldn't you? Okay, on a bar stool, yeah, there you go. So this gets harder. Now, here's kind of the cool part though. It's about 10 to 20% of total sleep. So to make our math easier here, if we had 10% and then we did some things with our sleep hygiene, we made sure our room was dark. We made sure it was the right temperature, which sometimes that's a challenge, isn't it? If you've got a significant other, because she wants it, you know, 104 ideally, and you want it 62, you know, in the room. So that's a problem that you have to figure out. Okay. But you get the right temperature. It's quiet. You know, don't live next to the train tracks or something. Stuff like that. If you get all those sleep hygiene things right, what if you could increase from 10% to 12%? Is that a big deal? It's only 2%. But what percentage increase is that? Some more math for you. 20% increase in deep sleep. Going back to my nutrition example, if you increased your fruit and vegetable intake by 20%, do you think that would increase your health?
Yeah.
Okay, think about that. So anything you can do to increase your deep sleep will dramatically improve how you feel, even if it's only a couple percentages. Okay, anything you can do. And I've got a little thing to help you with this. This is usually the first third of the night. So when you go to bed, you'll get that deep sleep. Okay, when you go to bed kind of earlier, so to speak. No, I shouldn't say it that way. The early part of your sleep cycle. There's some people that are night owls, and that's just normal for them. There's some people that are larks, they're called. They'll go to bed earlier, night owls stay up later, and that's okay. Growth hormone appears in deep sleep. This is, I have no affiliation with this company, but I think it's awesome, and I use this every night of my life. This is called Simply Noise. So Pink Noise, this is an app for your iPhone. I think they've got it for Android too, so write this down. I think it's a dollar, maybe it's free, I can't remember. But I use this every night. So this is it's white noise, pink noise, and brown noise generator. Pink noise has been proven to improve deep sleep. So you put this thing on, it's got a modulation mode that I usually use. I'll put it on medium modulation, so it goes like, it goes louder and then softer. Louder, softer. And it sounds exactly like the ocean. Okay? Whenever I stay at the beach, I always have the door open, so I can hear the waves coming in and out. I love that sound. So this has been proven to increase deep sleep. So you could do this, and for a buck, and get on a nice speaker or something by your bed, increase your deep sleep. REM sleep. REM sleep is about 20 to 25% of our total sleep time. Our body is atonal, not completely paralyzed necessarily, but atonal. One of the reasons we believe that this happens is so that you don't act out your dreams. People that don't go sort of paralyzed when they dream, they will sometimes act out their dreams, and that's actually a sleep disorder called REM behavior disorder, because they will usually beat the crap out of their sleep partner or something like that happens. Okay? So that's one of the sleep disorders. We do problem solving. Mind's very active, so we're doing all this stuff in dream sleep. Okay, little hint on this too. What you do before you go to bed will make a difference on this. So what do most people do before they go to sleep? Read, okay. Watch TV, watch what? The news, which is awesome, right? That's probably the best thing you could feed your mind right before bed, is all the happy stories about the fireman who saved the cat from the tree and stuff like that. Is that what's on the news? What's on the news? If it bleeds, it leads, right? Murder, mayhem, unrest in the Middle East, global warming, you know, all this crap that, like, we're all screwed, so let's talk about how screwed we are for 30 minutes. Oh, and by the way, it's going to be nice this weekend, though. The weather's going to be good. You know, at least they end with that. Yeah, that's it. Or they say it sucks, and then you're like, oh, crap, I don't even got the weather to look forward to. Okay? So if you want your brain working on peace in the Middle East, for example, watch the news before bed. If you'd like your brain working on how you can increase your personal happiness, how you can increase the productivity of your staff, how you can help your patients better, how you can help your child better, how you can do things like that, maybe think about that stuff before you go to sleep. And it will work on it for you while you're asleep. Okay, there's whole regions of, I don't know if it'd be called science or not, but lucid dreaming and all sorts of stuff that goes into this. But this, I can promise you, if you change what you're thinking about right before bedtime, you will have more dreams related to that. Okay? We can talk about nightmares, but nightmares are related to something else. Okay? So, that's a little hint for you too. So I don't ever watch the news before bed. Ever, ever. If I watch something on TV, it's something funny. It's just fun. Okay, and that's okay. Okay, we go through different cycles of sleep. We go in and out of these different cycles. So here's like a histogram of a normal, healthy young adult. It shows REM at the bottom, but that shouldn't be indicated that this is like deep, deep, deep sleep or something like that. There's deep sleep and there's REM sleep. They're different types of sleep. Okay, so here's deep sleep. You see there's more deep sleep here earlier, and there's more REM sleep later. This is also why you will oftentimes wake up in a dream. You'll wake up remembering your dreams, okay? Because you wake up in REM sleep. We are connected to light is our biggest visual clue for day and night. Again, one of the reasons I lecture in a lit room. So our retina gets light, and that tells us that we are awake. Maybe you might have seen me at the lunch break. I had like 10 minutes to eat, and then I went outside and got some actual sun to increase my brain's awareness that it's day. All right. Pharyngeal patency. So let's talk about airway. Our airway is held open. Our pharyngeal airway is held open all the time, except when we swallow. So when we are awake during the day, it's always held open. Okay. So none of you will have an apneic event during this lecture, unless you fall asleep. Okay. So our airway is always held open by reflex. When we go to sleep, this reflex can be lost, and it can narrow or completely close. There are different types of sleep disorders. There are over 96 sleep disorders. We will talk today about obstructive sleep apnea and bruxism, and I mentioned REM sleep behavior disorder, but that's it. So as you get into this field, you need to learn about these other sleep disorders just so you know about them, okay? Because as you treat sleep apnea, which is what we do as dentists, other things may unfold, okay? And there's things like insomnia and stuff that are good to understand. For example, just very briefly, let me cover two things really fast. REM sleep behavior disorder, I already mentioned, but let me give you an example of it. I had a patient who we were treating with an oral appliance. And he comes in one day for adjustment of his oral appliance, and he had all these scratches on his arm. He had a short sleeve shirt on in summer, and all these scratches and marks on his arm. I'm like, what happened to you? And he goes, oh, I'm glad you asked. I'm having dreams that I'm being attacked by a cat and I'm attacking my arm. I was like, oh, that's awesome. You have REM behavior disorder, which means my oral appliance is working because I'm protecting your airway and your brain's allowing you to get into REM sleep. So now go see the sleep doctor and deal with the REM behavior disorder. It's not my job. Make sense? Okay, had I not understood that stuff, I would have thought maybe something else. But what do you think our brain cares more about? Okay, for those of you this morning, you'll know the answer to this. Okay, be quiet. Okay, control yourself on yelling out the answer. Air or REM sleep? Air. So even though I just talked to you about the importance of sleep, the importance of deep sleep and REM sleep, your brain cares more about air than sleep. Okay, because air, without air for a few minutes, we're dead. We can go a while without sleep. Sleep is interesting, though. Does anyone know why we sleep? I give you a bunch of reasons. Does anyone in here understand why exactly we have to sleep? Body has to repair, you know. Okay, no one else knows. I'm just screwing with you a little bit. We actually don't know why we have to sleep. We know all these things that it does during sleep. But why? There's a brilliant article published in National Geographic 2 years ago that talks about that, and it says, you know, after studying sleep for 60 plus years, we still don't know why we do it. If you keep a rat up for 16 days-ish, it dies. Eventually it dies. Okay? Human beings, if you keep us up long enough, the brain will shut you down and you will sleep. Okay? It will force you to sleep. If we don't sleep, we'll eventually die. Okay? But, again, crappy sleep, that junk sleep, enough little bit of sleep, the brain will let that happen if we're not breathing well. So we have to protect our airway first. Okay? Insomnia, I mentioned. I'll just do this really quick. Insomnia gets confused a lot. So there's two types. There's multiple types of insomnia, but let me simplify it into two types. There's I can't go to sleep because my brain's racing. I can't turn it off. And there's I wake up in the middle of the night and can't go back to sleep. The second one, I wake up in the middle of the night, can't go back to sleep, think sleep apnea. Okay, because what's often happening in those cases, and these are usually in women, is they're having an apneic event, they're stopping breathing, their brain freaks out a little bit, they get an adrenaline rush, and they wake up with an adrenaline rush, and they're just all full of energy now, and they can't go back to sleep. Someone tells you that, they have sleep apnea, almost guaranteed. Okay? Because of that adrenaline rush. Some of you in this room have that. Okay, it's probably sleep apnea. These different things are contributing to sleep disorders, electric lights, stuff like that, cell phones. Most of you have your cell phone on your nightstand. Okay, if you don't have it on Do Not Disturb, that means it's, you know, chiming in the middle of the night when you get that important email from Uganda that the Ugandan prince has put $1 million in your account or whatever. So be careful with this stuff too. 70 million Americans suffer from sleep disorders. We have this in public safety come up sometimes. We had the pilots that missed Minneapolis. We have Exxon Valdez, which was people asleep at the wheel. We have all sorts of stuff all the time. When I spoke at Greater New York, that same weekend is when the guy fell asleep at the wheel of the train and went off the tracks. All this stuff. You know, policemen, truck drivers. Speaking of truck drivers, 47% of truck drivers report falling asleep at the wheel at some point in their driving career. The way I read this is 53% of truck drivers lie. 25% reporting dozing off at least one occasion. That's sort of scary. Does sleep deprivation impair cognitive motor performance as much as alcohol intoxication? Any of you ever watch Mythbusters? Mythbusters? My kids watch that all the time. So they repeated this study on Mythbusters. So what this is being drunk, better or worse, similar to being sleep deprived. And in this study, they took 39 participants who were all employees. 30 of the employees were from the transport industry, and 9 were U.S. military. So with this 39 people, are these people that should be good at staying awake? Yeah. So these people are selected there. They should be really good at staying awake. Okay, this isn't, you know, 39 dentists. You know, this would have been completely different if it was dentists. Because half of you, not half of you, several of you are asleep right now. 39, transport and military, okay? And then they kept them awake or they got them drunk, basically. So let's go through this. After 17 to 19 hours without sleep, performance on some tests was equivalent or worse than a blood alcohol content of 0.05. Okay, let's read this again. Do some math for me. After 17 to 19 hours without sleep. Say that in a different way. After 5 to 7 hours of sleep. Anyone in the crowd that occasionally only gets 5 to 7 hours of sleep? Anyone in the crowd who doesn't get 5 to 7, you know, that's 5 to 7 hours, that's like normal, right? So they kept them up 17 to 19 hours and they were already sleep, you know, they were having problems with that. Well, that's you every night. Okay? Response speeds were 50% slower on some tests, blah, blah, blah. After longer periods without sleep, performance reached levels equivalent to the maximum alcohol dose given to the participants. So longer periods of sleep, they got them up to 0.1, and they were as bad or worse. On Mythbusters, they did it with a driving test and stuff. They were worse sleep-deprived than intoxicated. Okay, so this begs the question, how many of you come to work on a regular basis drunk? There's one. Two, three. But you're thinking sleep-deprived, right? Or you're thinking literally drunk, right? Okay, and doctor, if someone came into your office, an employee, drunk, what would you do with that employee? Send them home? Send them home permanently or send them home for the day? Permanently. You fire them. Right? Agreed? If you had an employee show up inebriated, you'd be like, you're not part of the team. But how many of you have employees that come in functionally drunk? Lots. All the time. They'll even brag about it sometimes. I mean, they won't brag about it, but they're telling their friend, oh my gosh, I didn't sleep at all last night. Baby was up half, you know, almost all night. I slept like an hour. Sweet. You want to, you know, help me out with the surgical procedure I'm doing here? Fantastic. Okay. So there are people, I consult a big dental group out in North Carolina, and we had them fill out a sleep screening form. 85% of the employees reported being fatigued on a daily basis. 85% of their 400 employees. How much productivity do you think improvement I can have just by helping those people sleep better? No more employees. You know, not hiring more people, but just helping your staff sleep better, you're going to get huge increases in productivity. Okay. All right, well, what about parafunction? So sleep bruxism, we think about, you know, people grinding their teeth. This person has more than just bruxism. There's probably some erosion going on and stuff like that. Why in the world would people do this? Okay, there's different reasons. I have a whole other lecture on bruxism to get into this in detail, but I will hit this a few different times, that one of the things I think drives bruxism is sleep apnea. I believe a lot of people are clenching and or grinding their teeth to try to protect their airway so they don't die. Okay, so the thing that we've said forever of people grind their teeth because of stress. It is stress. It's the stress of suffocating to death, which is rather stressful. Okay, if you don't believe me, at any point you're thinking this guy's full of crap, hold your breath for the rest of the lecture. Simple test. You know, if you ever think, I don't believe it, just hold your breath. This is one of my patients sitting up awake in my cone beam CT machine. Okay, this little white dot there correlates with this right here. So 1.2 millimeters sitting up awake. This really wide slot over here is about 3 millimeters. To put that in perspective, those little coffee straws are 2.6 millimeters in diameter. So do you think it's theoretically possible when this patient goes to sleep at night that her jaw could fall back a whole millimeter? A whole millimeter? And obstruct? So this patient came in with a TMJ problem. I saw this, referred to for a sleep study. Hey, guess what? She had sleep apnea. We treat the sleep apnea, her jaw problem got better. Okay, because she was having to engage her muscles, mastication, and whatnot at nighttime to protect her airway so she wouldn't die. She had to do the head tilt chin lift thing on her own. Okay, because her brain cares more about that than it does about having pain. Here's another patient, 0.8 millimeter airway. This guy was a military guy in his 30s in the Air Force. So that's just a tease on that. More on that in other lectures. But there is a direct correlation, evidence-based correlation between bruxism and sleep apnea. And I'll get towards that at the end too, because that's the best entryway for you into this field. I mean, how many of you see people who have evidence of bruxism? Okay, that's a totally stupid question, right? Every day you see this. Okay, you're going to start asking them questions like, do you snore? And they will say, yeah. Okay, and other questions. How do you sleep? Well, not very well. So you will start seeing there's a correlation. I'll cover that more later. Snoring is vibration of the soft palate. Okay, so people can snore and not have sleep apnea. So there is something called simple snoring. This is what it kind of feels like to this person here. So megaphone head is getting a reasonable night's sleep. How about his wife? Probably not so good, right? So does snoring and sleep apnea affect the bed partner's sleep? You think it does? Is there anybody in here who can relate to this picture? Raise your hand. Okay, good. I think almost all women raise their hand at that question. That's actually, I call it secondhand sleep apnea. That's my term, dude. Don't be like ripping off my terms. Okay, write that down. Secondhand sleep apnea. You just killed one of my biggest jokes. Secondhand sleep apnea, I call it. Just like secondhand smoke, secondhand sleep apnea. So this is a study done at Mayo Clinic back in 99. I love this study. They took 10 couples, married couples. The husband was undergoing testing for sleep apnea in these 10 couples. And they decided, hey, let's bring in the wife with the guy and we'll test her simultaneously. So same bed, they're all wired up. Okay, wife is not suspected of having sleep apnea, the guy is. Oh, and this was a split night study. So halfway through the night, if the guy did have sleep apnea, which they all did, they woke him up and put him on CPAP, blew air up their nose, which stops the snoring, stops the apnea, right? So half of the night, baseline, second half on CPAP. Okay, here's what happened. So the patients, all male, demonstrated sleep apnea, apnea index of 26, average, there's the range. And then that went down to 7, there's the range with their CPAP. During the CPAP trial, the median arousal index of the spouses decreased from 21 to 12. So 21 times per hour, the spouses were being woken into lighter levels of sleep. 21 times an hour. So the guy was having 26 events, wife was having 21 events, so to speak. Their sleep efficiency, so once they got put on CPAP, this went from 21 down to 12, and their sleep efficiency, how much they were able to keep asleep, went from 74 to 87. Okay, what does that mean in real terms here? Elimination of the snoring and OSA of these patients was associated with an improvement in the quality of their bed partner's sleep. Assuming that 8 hours were spent in bed for sleep, a 13% improvement in sleep efficiency translates to an additional 62 minutes of sleep per night for the spouses of snorers with OSA. So those of you who raised your hand, how many of you would almost kill for an extra hour of sleep a night? Okay, well, you know who to kill. Okay, your spouse. Just take the pillow and like that, right? That's it. You're done. But this is really important. So, and again, it happened to be almost all women that raise their hands. Sometimes there's some guys who raise their hand on that too. But this also just tends to be one of those social, oh yeah, my husband snores like a chainsaw, you know, it's a real hassle. Over 30% of married couples don't sleep in the same bed. Okay, because of snoring. If they have the wherewithal, they'll be in different rooms. Okay. So, how does that affect marriages? I think that I have brought more couples back into the same bedroom than a marriage counselor has. Because I get rid of the snoring and bang. Okay, they're back in the same bedroom. So consider this, because it's not just that lack of sleep, that's screwing you up. You aren't getting deep sleep. You aren't getting REM sleep either. The hormones get screwed up. All this stuff gets screwed up. So take secondhand sleep apnea very seriously. It is messing up your health. So for you women who raised your hand, you get the dude fixed. Okay? If you don't want to have 6 kids, you get him fixed the other way too. All right. Everyone who snores will eventually have sleep apnea if they live long enough. So this is a cool app too. Again, nothing to do with this company, but I think it's really nice. So it's called Snore Lab. So you'll have patients that are, you ask them, well, do you snore? They're like, I don't know. I don't have anyone around. Tell me. They can get this. I think this also might have a Android app. I can't remember. But bottom line is there's apps out there that will record snoring. And how many times and how loud. This one's really cool because it has where you can have snoring remedies. So in other words, you could give someone an oral appliance. You get baseline data with this. Give them an oral appliance and then have them use this to see if your oral appliance is helping. Okay, so for a dollar of the patient's money, and no outlay of capital by you, and no risk of your $4,000 home sleep testing device being stolen or dropped in the toilet or something like that, you can objectively measure if they're getting better or not. Okay, so it's a great little app. I use this all the time with my patients to see how they're doing. All right, sleep apnea. There are different types of sleep apnea. There's obstructive, central, and mixed. Okay, so here is someone sleeping. This is their airflow. This is their chest moving and their abdomen and snoring. This is a hypopnea. So they're breathing in, out, in, out, in, out. And then there's an airflow reduction. That's in hypopnea. The oxygen level goes down. In an apnea, you're breathing in and out, in and out, in and out. And then you stop breathing because there's an obstruction. So you're trying to breathe, but nothing's happening. Okay, apnea always happens on the inhale. You... it blocks, and you're trying to breathe like crazy, putting all this pressure here, and then eventually your brain just gets you to the point where you can, and then you can start breathing again. And I'll show a real example of that right here shortly. Another obstructive apnea, and you see the chest and abdomen just going crazy here. Get this ready. This is called a central apnea, so this is where the brain forgets to tell you to breathe. So you're breathing along, and then there's no effort, okay? Do you think an oral appliance would work with someone who has central sleep apnea? No, because they're not trying to breathe. CPAP doesn't work with people with central sleep apnea. Now, so far, I've never seen anybody with pure central sleep apnea. People will have obstructive sleep apnea, it'll be like 80, 90% obstructive, and they'll have some centrals. And those people are okay to treat, all right? But if you ever had a patient come in that was pure central, again, I've never seen it. I've only treated 5,000 or 6,000 people so far, but I've not seen it. So you might see that. If you did, you'd be like, whoa, wait a second here. We need to talk to the doctor and see if you're in the right place. Okay? This is a mixed apnea. It starts off central and then is obstructive as they start to try breathing. All right, so here we have a real person. Okay, I would propose to you that this is the most exercise this guy gets all day long. You agree? And he's on his side. He's a big fat guy, but there's no way he's sleeping on his back. And that reminds me, my dad, mentioned in his sleep study, one of the reasons he thought that the sleep apnea stuff didn't really exist was because in the sleep lab, they made him sleep on his back. And he's like, I don't sleep on my back. And he was right. He didn't sleep on his back. Whenever I would see him at home in bed, he would always be on his side. I have a theory about that. I think big fat guys learn to only sleep on their side because their brain is smart enough to know that they can't sleep on their back. So they sleep on their side. Did you say not true? You're not a big enough fat guy. You're not big enough fat guy. You've had surgery. You had to do it. Yeah, you had to kind of weigh those options. With my dad, he slept on his side. I bet you this guy does not sleep other than on his side. Because if he did, you saw how bad his sleep apnea was on his side. And do you understand now how the oxygen level could go down? Because he held his breath, and then he... and then stopped again. Over and over and over again throughout the night. So his O2 set is just going to drop. Eventually, his brain's going to be like, okay, wake up, dude. And it's going to wake him up enough, long enough, to get his O2 sats up, and then he'll start the cycle all over again. Okay, so where this is happening is right here. From my lecture this morning on anatomy, the tongue attaches right here, genioglossus. Oh, by the way, for any of you who are in my sleep lecture now but weren't in TMD this morning, you might consider coming to the TMD lecture on Saturday morning. Because there's a major correlation between sleep and TMD, and frankly, the hardest thing about treating sleep apnea is TMD. Okay, I like to say dental sleep medicine is easy as long as you're an expert in TMJ. If you're an expert in TMJ, piece cake. Piece cake. Which is why most of the experts in this field right now are experts in TMJ. Because we put slints in people's mouths, we put jaws in different positions, well, we've done our whole career, so this is like, piece of cake, we can do this all day long. If you don't understand that stuff and you put something in someone's mouth and their bite is off the next day, you're going to freak out. Okay? So, anyway, you might want to learn some stuff about TMD as you're doing this. But this is what we're dealing with, is right here. The reason we can help is the tongue is attached to the genial tubercles. When we bring the jaw forward, we open the airway. That's it. Okay? I can end the lecture right there. All oral appliances do the same thing. They keep the jaw from falling backwards, or they bring it forward a little bit, or they position the tongue in some way. It's all about the tongue. Okay, this is what you're looking at every day in your office, right? So what I want you to do is just gaze slightly past the pearly white things and look down here. And if you can't see down that hole, you start asking some questions. Here are some stats. More than 40% of adults over 40 snore. Okay. This I leave up here, even though I totally don't believe it, and I'll have some other slides right after this. But it says 9% of men and 4% of women have sleep apnea. I think those numbers are way higher, and I'll have some data to prove that. But I leave this up here. I always put this in to make this point. 9% of men have it, but 4% have symptoms. 4% of women have it, 2% have symptoms. Say that another way. What percentage of people have symptoms? Half. Okay, so again, those of you in the room who don't already believe you have sleep apnea, now you should think you have sleep apnea because half of the people with sleep apnea don't have symptoms. All right? I didn't necessarily have symptoms. I'm in this field, so I was interested and got the studies and did that kind of stuff. Well, sure enough, I got it. I treat myself and I notice a difference. So half of your patients, when you're talking to them about this stuff, you need to remember this slide. Because you say, you know what, we're seeing this correlation. You've got wear on your teeth. You've got this stuff going on. Maybe it has something to do with sleep apnea. Oh, I don't have sleep apnea, doc. You know what? I don't know if you do or not. But I think it might be worth your while to see this sleep doctor. Have a conversation. That's all I'm asking. I care about you. I'd like you not to have a stroke. I'd like you not to have a heart attack. Just have a conversation with a sleep doctor. Would you do that for me? I guess. Okay? Because you say, you know what, half the people with this, they don't even notice. They don't even know that they got a problem until it gets diagnosed and they get treated. And then they're like, oh my gosh, I feel like $1 million. Okay, any of you in here that were kind of like that? Like someone told you you might have a problem and you got checked out and then you got treated? Anyone in here? Yeah? Okay, so you weren't necessarily yourself signing up for a sleep study. It was your bed partner saying, dude, you're dying. Stop breathing all night long. Okay. And do you feel better now that you're treated? Good for you. There we go. Prove my point. Thank you. I'll write you that check afterwards. Yep. CPAP, oral appliance, whatever. Okay, just treat it. And this is always mechanical. Okay, we're not putting people on drugs for sleep apnea. So it's all mechanical treatment. blow air up the nose, bring the jaw forward, whatever. And excuse me, I shouldn't say bring the jaw forward because I'm not a big believer in bringing the jaw forward. Keep the jaw from falling backwards. Put it that way. So the question is, if I can keep the jaw from falling backwards with an oral appliance, do I need CPAP? No. So it's usually not both. I'll talk about combination therapy briefly, but it's either or usually. Okay. All right, some stats. OSA, this one says 20 million. Again, it's way more than that. But based on these, what I think are wrong numbers on the screen right now, compare that with some other diseases you may have heard of, like asthma, 10 million. Diabetes, 16 million. You heard of those before? So sleep apnea, more people than those problems. Okay, now to kind of prove my point on the, our numbers are wrong. So this was published in 2009. They looked at a huge group of people, 5,426 non-obese patients that had had sleep studies, and found that 54% of these people had sleep apnea. Non-obese. Okay, right now our physician colleagues are looking for fat old men. That is sleep apnea. Fat old men. Everyone else gets diagnosed with something else. I'll talk about those in a second. This one was done in Sweden. Okay, so when you think of Swedish women, do you automatically think fat old man? No, think of the opposite of fat old man, right? So this was in Sweden, 400 women from a random sample of 10,000 women, and they got them to do a questionnaire, and then they brought them in and did a full sleep study, wired them up, did the whole full night sleep study thing. They found obstructive sleep apnea in 50% of those Swedish women. Age 20 to 70. Isn't that crazy? So we are greatly missing a lot of people with this problem. So what are some of the signs and symptoms here? So daytime sleepiness. Now women will usually not report sleepiness, they'll report fatigue. Fatigue. Non-restorative sleep, poor memory, clouded intellect, morning headaches, impotence, depression, irritability. Let me cover that real quick. I can go back. Just turn that off. Depression. So I've mentioned the fat old man here multiple times. If you go into the doctor and say, I'm not sleeping well, I don't have energy like I used to, what are you likely to walk out of that office with? Anyone? Antidepressant. Guaranteed. You're getting drugs. You're depressed. Okay? And that sort of really sucks. Does anyone think that sucks? Because you're depressed. Now, did you notice that? So if you go in and you have an ear infection, you aren't an ear infection. You aren't a sinus problem, but you are depressed. You notice the slight difference there in the verbiage? That's your new label. I'm depressed. Because I take Prozac. And if I'm really depressed, I take multiple drugs. And then I can have competitions with my girlfriends of who is the most depressed. Because you're only on this dose, and I'm on this dose, so your depression's bullcrap. I'm clinically depressed. Okay, I'm making light of this a little bit, but I'm going to do it for a purpose. Because I want you all to go home on Facebook and say, hey, friends, if you've been diagnosed with depression, it might be sleep apnea. Because if you're a woman, you're depressed. You're on antidepressants. If I go in and say the exact same symptoms you did, I get a sleep study. Because I'm a guy. If I weigh 20 pounds more than I do right now, I for sure get a sleep study. Because then I'm a little overweight guy. Make sense? Okay, so be skeptical of that. Be very vigilant. It makes me upset. I'm a dude. You women should be completely pissed about this. Okay, and look at this for your patients. I cannot tell you how many of my patients have gotten off their antidepressants once I treated their sleep apnea. Because they were just fatigued. It wasn't depression. Okay, they didn't have a Prozac deficiency. They weren't sleeping. All right, what about GERD? Can't watch TV without a commercial coming on to take Nexium, to take Prilosec, to take whatever. A lot of these are over the counter now, so you can just take them for that. You saw that guy's abdomen after the apneic event there. All this pressure and stuff going on. That causes a negative pressure up in here, puts all this pressure on his stomach. What could possibly happen with that scenario? Is it possible that his gastric contents could come up? Yeah, it's possible. And a lot of people with sleep apnea, they will have a bottle of Tums on their nightstand, which several of you do. Okay? So then you get diagnosed, you go to the doctor, hey, doctor, I got heartburn all the time. Well, here's some Nexium. Great. What do those drugs do? What do? They reduce the acid content of your stomach. That's a really good idea, I think, because isn't this sort of screwed up that our stomach is acidic? I mean, who the hell designed that? Oh, is it supposed to be acidic, our stomach? Oh, it is? So when I take the Nexium and it makes my stomach less acidic, then I just can't digest my carrots as well. That's probably good. So we take all these fat people, put them on Nexium, so the crappy diet that they have, they can't even digest. That's awesome. Okay, does anyone think this stuff through? Are they ever calling a dentist like me, like to pass this stuff by, you know, before they take these things to market? It's all about marketing. It's all about money. It's never about getting to the bottom of it, because then you can't sell the drugs anymore. Okay? So now someone's going to kill me, like from Pfizer in the room or whatever. So, am I saying all depression, by the way, is sleep apnea? No. I'm saying before my wife goes on Prozac, she's getting a sleep study. Am I saying that all GERD is sleep apnea? No. I'm saying before I go on Nexium, I'm getting a sleep study. Is that reasonable? Okay. Spread that word. Okay. And you're going to help a lot of people get off of their drugs because they're misdiagnosed. And the etiology is treatable mechanically, without screwing up our system here. Nighttime symptoms, they snore. That's kind of obvious. But not all people who snore have sleep apnea, and not all people with sleep apnea snore. But usually people with sleep apnea snore. They may awaken or gasp during the night. They may sweat. They may thrash in bed. Bruxism. So this is what I want you guys to hone in on as dentists, is that bruxism is related to sleep apnea. Okay? And when you start seeing this, when you start asking people about it, just paradigm shift. You've thought that it was related to whatever you thought it was. Lack of canine guidance, second molar interferences, whatever. Don't care what you thought. Okay? Think airway. All right. Now let's talk about kids. Anyone find that a little disturbing? Okay? So I show you the big fat guy, you're all yucking it up. Not so much with a little kid, huh? The fat guy, it's like, yeah, serves him right. Big fat guy, serves you right. Little kid, though, what'd they do to deserve that? Nothing. Okay, so little kids can have sleep apnea, too. And this is being misdiagnosed in little kids, too. Let me take your question. Yes, sir. I don't think I have that slide in here, so it depends on the occlusal guard. The question is, if people who wear occlusal guards have improvement in sleep apnea, there was a study done, again, this is in my bruxism lecture that I can send you if you want, that using a maxillary occlusal splint made half of the people worse with sleep apnea, which should scare the hell out of all of you. Okay, I'll take one question more and then I move on. Yep. In kids, I'll cover that. Thank you. That one I will cover. So in kids, and I'll turn that off with the sound here so it doesn't disturb you anymore. So to answer very quick, and then I'll have the studies, is tonsil adenoids are number one in kids. We always suspect tonsils and adenoids. Okay? And we take them out, and then we go from there. So in kids, snoring, I want to write this down if you got some notes. Snoring and bruxism means sleep apnea, till proven otherwise. Snoring and they grind their teeth means sleep apnea. Okay? And y'all say, well, kids grind their teeth, don't they? Okay, why do kids grind their teeth? With adults, it's stress. Why is it in kids? Oh, they just do. They just do. It's mixed dentition. It's whatever. It's worms. Right? Who knows? But they just do. And then they eventually grow out of it. No, I don't think they do. I think some do. The ones that grow out of it, you can tell. The ones that grew out of it, you look at their first molars, and they're flat, and the rest of the teeth are fine. They grew out of it. The ones that have wear other places, they didn't grow out of it. It just took longer for it to manifest, because the primary dentition has thin enamel, and it's structured differently, so it's more apt to break down faster, so it's easy to see. In adult enamel, adult teeth, it takes longer, so you start seeing this when they go to college because they switch dentists. And the new dentist goes, hey, you've got wear. You should get a night guard. You're stressed because it's college. No, it took them 6 years to get that, 8 years to get that. Okay, so remember that. Snoring, bruxism, sleep apnea. ADHD, let's talk about that for a second. How many of you have kids? What happens when you keep a 3 to 5 year old up way past their bedtime? Do they get more sedate? Are they sitting there going like, Mom, could you just put me to bed for crying out loud? No, what do they become? Crazy, right? Okay, we're at the happiest place on earth here, Disneyland. I got my kid with me tomorrow night. I will probably reenact this. I've done this multiple times at Disney World and Disneyland, usually with all my kids. I only have one of my little kids with me this time. But have any of you ever taken your kids to the fireworks? Okay, which are traditionally at nighttime, right? So you've spent all day walking 50,000 miles. You've had you had to increase the credit limit on your credit cards to have lunch, okay? The $50 Mickey burgers and stuff. And then you decide, you know what, let's stay for the fireworks because I'm a good dad. So you stay for the fireworks, fabulous show, and now you're walking out of the park. And all around you are crazy kids going nuts. And all the parents are trying to keep their cool and not kill their kids because there's too many witnesses. Right? And then you get out to your car, and then finally, once you're in the car, you can like say some stuff, and then there's crying and gnashing of teeth, as it says in the Bible. And then the kid, what happens to the kid within 2 minutes of driving out of the parking lot? They crash. And then you get back, if you're me, you've traveled, so you get back to your condo, and you get the kid, and you got to carry him into bed, don't you? Because they're out. Okay, and you're like, gosh dang kid, I got to, deal with you, and now you're in deep sleep on me? Oh my gosh. Okay. Kids that are tired become cranky, become hyperactive. Okay? What do physicians give kids diagnosed with ADHD? Ritalin. Street name? Speed. Speed. Adderall. Ritalin. Speed. We give kids speed. Oh, now, Dr. Spencer, it's a paradoxical effect. Everybody knows that. No, it's not paradoxical. If you give a tired child speed, they act normal. You follow me? Tired child, give them speed, they act normal. Okay, another thing for you to go post on Facebook, because there's a bunch of little kids that are being put on speed and they have sleep apnea. Am I saying all ADHD is related to sleep apnea? No, I wish it was. I wish all bruxism was related to sleep apnea. I wish all GERD was related to sleep apnea. I wish all depression was related to sleep apnea. Wouldn't that be the most wonderful thing ever? Because we can treat it mechanically. That'd be fabulous. It's not. All I'm saying is before my kid goes on speed, he's getting a sleep study. And my kid indeed had a sleep study. Okay? And the symptom was he wasn't doing very well in school. That was it. Minor wear on his teeth. No snoring. But I got him in, got the tonsils out, and he became a different child overnight. He was 6 at the time, and I have a 6-year-old now who's going in for a sleep study Saturday, because he snores, okay? All right, bedwetting. Okay, you saw that pressure on the abdomen there? Puts pressure on the bladder, what's the bed? Okay. So, but remember, snoring, bruxism, that means sleep apnea for sure. Did I say they have to snore and have bruxism? No, I didn't say that. I'm saying if they have those two, they for sure have it. Okay, I've given you personal examples of my kids who didn't have those things and still had sleep apnea. All right, rapid maxillary expander is an effective appliance for treating kids with sleep apnea. Hypertrophy of the tonsils is the most common cause of obstructive sleep apnea in kids. Tonsil removal may improve school performance. Okay, other than these girls looking like they all got beaten by the ugly stick, what do they all have in common? They're all mouth breathers. What else? Long faces. What else? Bags under their eyes. What'd you say? They're squinting. It's bright. Okay? I guess they're related. I'm not sure. But look, they all got big noses but little tiny nostrils because they're not using their nose because they have to mouth breathe because they have big adenoids. So this is in a book published in 1913 and the caption is Girls with Adenoids. Isn't that interesting? They look like bad, don't they? So again, black circles under their eyes, that's bad news. ADHD. Snoring is associated with higher levels of inattention and hyperactivity. 81% of snoring children with ADHD could have it eliminated if their snoring were effectively treated, the tonsillectomy. If your child has ADHD and trouble breathing, tonsils may be to blame. Children with ADHD are 2.5 times more to be likely to be bedwetters. Surgical removal of the upper airway obstruction led to significant decrease or complete cure of bedwetting in 76% of the kids studied. In this study, they did maxillary expansion on 10 kids, and the bedwetting stopped within a few months in all 10. Okay. This is some of you at the end of the day at the office there. That's my little guy, after Thanksgiving or something, I suppose. And he's having a sleep study on Saturday. All right, I think we're doing good here. So some of the medical risk factors, and again, so what our medical colleagues are looking for is fat people that are old and male. So fat old man, that's the what we're looking for. So if you're a family doctor, this is what you're looking for. And if they're fat old man, boom, sleep apnea. And do fat old men have sleep apnea? Yeah, fat old men have sleep apnea. Okay? You shouldn't be, you know, against the fat old man. I'm not saying that. They should get sleep studies too. But this all we're seeing is that. And so everybody else gets diagnosed with everything else and put on drugs. Okay? So some stuff that we can start looking for as a dentist. So if they are heavier, neck circumference greater than 16, high arch palate. So now we start talking some dental stuff. So a narrow palate. Retronathia, if your chin's back, that just kind of makes sense anatomically that you'd be more likely to have a narrow airway. If you can't see down their throat, that is more likely at risk. On the obesity, here just for fun to make you feel good, here's a obesity scale. So you can take how tall you are and then your weight and find out if you are underweight, normal, overweight, or obese. If you're over here, then, you know, you might have something in common with this guy. And this guy, he beat anorexia, so. That's a tough disease. Hey, hats off to him, man. I gave this lecture someplace, I can't remember, Louisiana or someplace like that, where the entire crowd looked like this guy, by the way. No, I'm just kidding. But there's a guy who's like, you know what, I'm having these shirts made for some friends of mine. It's like I know just the guy to wear that shirt. All right, so again, narrow arches, look for that. Blocked airway, so you should see a nice open airway like this. Now, by the way, everything I'm saying is just a thing that you put a check in a column and you start adding stuff up and you ask questions. Okay, I have a guy that has the most open airway I've ever seen, and he has severe sleep apnea, and he's in his 20s. I mean, I could stick my arm down his throat. His airway is so huge, and he has severe sleep apnea because his tongue falls back. Okay, so it's never just one of these things. These are just things that you look at, and you start adding stuff up, all right? But if you see this, that's more likely, obviously, that they're going to obstruct. Okay? Stalactite of a uvula. So if you are doing that whole thing every night, that pulls on your uvula and lengthens it over time. So sometimes are you know, especially hygienists. Hygienists are oftentimes better. Any hygienists in the room are better at getting this than the dentist because you spend more time a lot of times with your patients and you're kind of looking right there. And you can actually sort of talk to your patient while you work, where it's a little bit harder for the dentist to do that sometimes. Okay? So for you, this can be a really good thing as you're talking to the patient and they can say uh-huh and stuff like that a little bit. And you're looking at their airway. Okay, look at this guy, you can't even see his uvula. It's so far down. You'll also notice this edema. So from going, you think that could make that red over time? Another little pearl. Gag reflex in younger people means sleep apnea, in my opinion. It's correlated with sleep apnea in younger people. Okay? Because their brain is really worried about this area. So you start putting stuff in there, and the brain says, whoa, let's don't do that. Ask those people, too, if they're claustrophobic. And it will blow your mind how many times they're claustrophobic. Same thing. It's the brain saying, I can't breathe. I don't want to be in here. Okay, I'm worried about this airway. Don't put me in a small spot. Okay? Just blows your mind how often that is. The opposite is true with gag reflex with old people. So with old people, lack of gag reflex is indicated with sleep apnea. Because they have, for 50 years, all the nerves are dead. So that's the person you can drop your mirror down their throat, and you don't even wake them up. And you think, dude, I'm the best dentist in the world, you know. So by the way, get that out of your head too, that these people falling asleep in your chair means that you're the best dentist in the world. Or you're the best hygienist in the world, because you're so awesome. Yeah, did I hear all that? Aw, suck. That's my whole thing in life. It's like, look, they can sleep in my chair. Isn't that great? No, it means they have sleep apnea and they're dying. It's not great. Okay? They should be sitting there going, let me out of here. I mean, that's the normal response. Not like, oh yeah, let me sleep while you work on my teeth. Give me a root canal. No, that's not normal. Those people have sleep apnea. Big tonsils, that's bad news. This is one of my favorite slides. Okay, this is all one guy. Okay, he's got like a 50-pound tongue. That's an issue. God bless the dentist who did the crowns back here, though, but, you know, or the assistant that had to use a come-along to pull the tongue over here. That's impressive. Tongue-tied. And then check this out. What's missing back here? His uvula. So some, I'm sure, well-intentioned ear, nose, and throat doctor thought, no, it's probably not the 50-pound tongue. It's probably the 1-ounce uvula in the back of the throat. So let me cut that off. Charge you $5,000. Couldn't take the tongue out. True, that's a harder job. They do tongue resections. It's just way easier to go zip like that. Oh yeah, they'll cut pieces out of the tongue. Oh no. Muscle doesn't grow back. You know, and they'll do all sorts of crazy surgeries. But I just can't believe some ENT did that. That's unbelievable. Tori are indicative of someone who has clenched and ground their teeth for a long time, I believe. Okay? These teeth here, solid or loose? Rock solid. Okay? This is a bone builder. Bone builder. Okay? You cut off the tori, they come back. Okay? They build bone. There is finally some research, I've suspected this for a few years, but there's finally some research now showing that periodontal disease is correlated with sleep apnea. Okay? If people are clenching and grinding their teeth, there's a weak link somewhere in the system. In this person, they're clenching and grinding their teeth. See how it's worn, too? On the front teeth? Why would you grind out here? Who does that? Lots of people do that. Why do they do it? Open their airway, maybe. Okay? So this person's doing this. They build bone. If they don't build bone, then they break down. And then you get bone loss. You get perio. And you get people brushing their teeth, and they're flossing, and they're doing everything, and you're doing everything you can, and it's a lost cause. They're going to lose their teeth, aren't they? Because that parafunction, you can't control. You put the plastic between your teeth, you do all that stuff, and they still do it, don't they? Because which does the brain care more about, air or periodontal bone loss? Okay, so when you see that in your patients, suspect. Am I saying all periodontal disease is due to sleep apnea? No, I'm not. But wouldn't it be awesome if it was? You get it? You starting to get what I'm talking about here? Okay, thanks. All right, how do we diagnose this? We send them for a sleep study. So my shtick, what I do, is I refer patients to sleep doctors. Okay? And this is what I suggest you do too. I suggest you look in your community, find multiple sleep doctors, call them up. Hey doc, took a course from this redheaded crazy guy, and I think that some of my patients may have sleep apnea. Sure they do. I'm going to start sending them. I'm just a dentist. I'd like to send them to you for evaluation. Okay? I don't send directly for sleep studies. I send to the sleep doctor. And then I can tell the patient, say, you know what, Mrs. Johnson, I see these things going on. You know what? Sometimes there may be a correlation between your jaw problem, between your bruxism, between your periodontal disease, between your whatever, and sleep apnea. I know you didn't come in today thinking I was going to talk to you about sleep apnea. Why would you think that? You came in to get your teeth cleaned today. But sometimes there's a correlation. I care about you as my patient. Sleep apnea is a life-threatening problem. You could die from it. I would like you to see Dr. Johnson, the sleep doctor, and just have a talk with him. I'm just a dentist. I don't know. Would you consider seeing the sleep doctor just for consult, see if maybe a sleep study is indicated? That's it. That's your job. That's your job. Okay, what if that patient goes and sees a sleep doctor, gets a sleep study, and gets put on CPAP? Oh, you should be pissed. No way. Happy. Because the person is now on CPAP and you're saving their life. Is that pretty good? How many of you are mad when you do your cancer screening and you send them off to the cancer doctor and that damn cancer doctor treats the patient and doesn't send it back to you to put them on chemo? Okay, is that the stupidest thing you've ever heard a person say, what I just said right there? You would never think that. But I have dentists tell me, it's like, oh, I get so mad, I send them over to the sleep doctor, and they put them on CPAP. Well, yeah, duh. CPAP works. Why not? Okay? But if you want to be in this field, you can also learn about oral appliances, and then you can be part of the team. Okay, I never get upset if they put them on a therapy that works for them. I tell the patient in advance, here are your options. And when they talk to you about treatment, you may say, I'd like to opt for the little tiny piece of plastic that goes in my mouth rather than the big Darth Vader mask. But that's your call. Okay? So my patients go in sort of wanting the oral appliance. Y'all cool with that? That makes sense? Now, I suggest sleep doctor, not primary care doctor. Okay? And no offense to primary care doctors, but if you send them to the primary care doctor, what might happen? You're not a fat old man. There's no way you have sleep apnea. You're not a fat old man. You send the kid to the pediatrician. You're not an obese child. You're just a little kid. I'm sure you're fine. Here's some Ritalin. Okay? Not my kid. Not my wife. It's not how I'm doing it. So I bypass that. I go to the sleep doctor. All right, we wire him up like this. This guy's got a big smile on his face because he's thinking this is awesome. So who has had the sleep studies again? You had one? Is it awesome? No. No one's like, oh, hooray, I get a sleep study. This is great. So they put this goop on your head and all these wires on you and straps on your chest and stomach. You have to like run a wire down your leg. You got a thing on your finger. Strange. And then he's like, good night. Have a good night's sleep. I'm going to be watching you in the other room. Sleep well. Okay, this is me, wired up. That looks great, doesn't it? And I was like, how am I going to sleep with all this stuff on me? But I did. At first, you're just laying there like, okay, I can't move because they spent half an hour wiring me up. And if this comes off, then they got to start all over again. So you're like, But after a while, I slept on my side. And I sleep on my stomach a lot, so I rolled over. Nothing came off during the night. Here's my kid, Jefferson. He's with me on this trip. So this is back when he was 6 years old. And can you imagine all these wires and all this stuff? Okay. Yeah, he's just going to go right to sleep, right? Okay. This woman watches this screen all night long. And she, by definition, she has a sleep disorder. Okay? Because she's a shift worker. So she's awake all night long. All right, but we wired him up, and then I told him, I said, okay, Jeff, I'm going to be watching you sleep in the other room, so I'd like you to go to sleep real quick here. And he's like, okay, Dad. So I walk around the corner. It took him 3 minutes to fall asleep. 3 minutes. He slept all night long and had sleep out. He had about a 3 or 4 AHI, which, again, in a kid 1.5 or higher is bad. We got his tonsils out. He's a different kid. All right, problems with PSG. For those of you who have had this, this will make sense. For those of you who have patients who have had a sleep study, you will hear these things, which is why I spend time on this. So the patient has a problem getting sleep, so they're like, well, here's a sleeping pill. And the patient goes, I don't take sleeping pills. You're messing with the results here. I don't take sleeping pills. Okay, but the sleeping pills they give them don't make sleep apnea worse. We've proven that, okay? But they don't tell them that. They don't go into detail. So your patient will say, that thing was a joke because of that. Or that thing was a joke because I didn't sleep at all. Okay, sleep has an amnesic quality to it. When you go to sleep, you never know how long you've been asleep. All right? Okay, one of my most favorite experiences in life, see if any of you enjoy this too, is when I wake up, I feel refreshed, and I look over the alarm clock, and it's like 3:30. And I go, hooray, I don't have to get up, and I feel good now. Fantastic. You know, you guys like that? Or the other version is you wake up, you don't feel that good, but you're like, oh, okay, and you look over the clock and it's like 6:29 and the alarm's going to go off in like 3 seconds. I'm like, ah, crap. Right? Y'all experience that? Okay, so we never know exactly how long we've slept, so this is amnesia quality sleep. Yes, sir? I'll talk about the home sleep testing. Patient forced to sleep on the back, like my dad said. They don't do that anymore, though. And no one goes over the PSG in detail. This is a big one. So if you want to learn about that kind of stuff, come to Boise, come to Tufts, and learn about this in more detail, because I go over the sleep study with my patient. And I am usually one of the first ones who ever has. And the first one that helps the patient understand their disease. And they love it. That's right. Because you go over it in detail and why and what's going on. And they're like, oh, wow, I wish someone would have told me that. Okay, why didn't someone tell me that? Why didn't someone tell me an oral appliance was an option when they put me on the CPAP? Okay, no one talked to me about that. Okay, where you guys live, if most of you are in California, which I assume you are, you have like Kaiser and stuff like that here. Most of these people don't even see a doctor. They go in, they get their test or they get their home test, and then the CPAP machine shows up in the mail. It's awesome, right? It's efficient, but the patient has no clue what's going on unless they seek it out. With that system, they can go get as much knowledge as they want, but for cost efficiency, they will do it as cheap as possible. Okay? All right, home sleep testing. So home sleep testing, and I put this in quotes, because most of the portable monitors can't tell if you're asleep or not. So someone could put on a home sleep test device, sit in a Lazy Boy recliner and watch TV all night long, for all you know. And it's like, oh, you don't have any problem at all. Like, yeah, wink, wink, nod, nod, I didn't even go to sleep. Because you just did this and I'm a trucker, and I don't want it on my records that I've got sleep apnea. So I'm going to stay awake all night long. Or they put on their wife, or whatever. Okay? So we don't know if they slept. These are less expensive and way more convenient for patients. I believe, so you mark my words on this, on, what's today, May 15th? May 15th, 2014, Dr. Spencer said that within about 3 or 5 years, standard protocol will be you'll go into a family doctor and they'll take your blood pressure, they'll do a urine analysis, they'll maybe take some blood, and they'll do a home sleep test. It'll just be standard. Because it's cheap. It's really inexpensive to do this. Or there'll be apps for your iPhone. They'll give you a nasal cannula that you plug into a thing and you do it out of your phone. Because we're carrying a really sophisticated computer with us all the time. So they will do sleep studies automatically. Because again, as I've discussed with you already today, how many people could be off of drugs if we treated their sleep? A ton. It'd save billions of dollars, literally. Okay? So we will be doing these home sleep testing. Right now, I let the sleep doctor and the patient make that decision. So the patient may say, oh, my buddy had a sleep study. That sounded like an awful experience. Well, you know what? They have these home ones now that you can do that are really easy. It's just like a little wristwatch, or it's something you just take and you just put it on your head or whatever. These are really easy. You can do it in your own bed. Oh, that doesn't sound so bad. Yeah, you know what? Talk to the doctor about it. Maybe that'd be right for you. Okay. They even have these now for kids, but I wouldn't do this on my kid. That's just my preference. But this one is FDA approved for using in children, which is great because that means we'll be able to test more kids. So I am advocate of that. But I want my personal child to be in a lab where we can really look at the nitty gritty of what's going on. Okay. But these are great. Okay. However, here's some problems. Many devices, we can't tell if you slept or not. The patient has to set up the device themselves. They might do it wrong. Okay? And this is the big one. That's why it's in yellow. You cannot rule out sleep apnea with a portable monitor. Only in. So if any of you have bought these machines and you're using them and you're screening with it and it comes back that they don't have sleep apnea, you do not know that they don't have sleep apnea. You follow me? So don't do that. I have 4 home sleep testing units in my office. We use them to see if our treatment is helping or not. So we have someone who's already had a baseline study, home sleep study or PSG or whatever, and we can use our home sleep test to see how they're doing. That makes sense, right? But if you use it just like, you know what, I'm going to use it with you and see if you have it or not, comes back, oh, you know what, you don't have sleep apnea. You cannot do that. You can only have it come back and go, oh, you do have sleep apnea. All right? So don't waste your money. on those things. Just use the medical community that's already there, okay, in my opinion. You can have those devices to help you treat people if you want, but otherwise don't waste your money. All right, treatment of OSA and snoring. We have non-surgical treatment and surgical treatment. Oral appliances and CPAP are in the non-surgical. I will talk very briefly on surgical. So some of the conservative measures, people can lose weight. So again, some of these fat, old man type patients, it could be their weight. Now, how I kind of differentiate that is if I have a patient that says, that will ask me, sometimes ask me, like, you know what, doc, you think this might be related to my weight? I'll say, well, how long have you snored? And I've snored since I was 18 years old. No, it's not your weight. Or, well, you know, I really didn't snore until I gained 20 pounds. Okay, probably is your weight. So lose weight. Okay, here's one of the bummers about sleep apnea. Have any of you heard of ghrelin and leptin? Does that mean anything to anybody? What are ghrelin and leptin? They're hormones that affect appetite and satiety. So feeling full and feeling hungry. In sleep apnea patients, they get screwed up. So you never feel full and always feel hungry. That's a good recipe, isn't it? So people with sleep apnea, it's not a willpower thing. It's not a, hey, just lose weight. Oh, all right. My hormones are telling my brain that I'm always hungry and I'm never full. That is hard to do a diet. Okay? So if you start treating them and you treat their sleep apnea, all of a sudden those hormones get back online correctly and they will lose weight without even trying because they will start to feel full and not feel hungry all the time. Cool, huh? All right, treat the nose, pharyngeal surgery, oral appliances. All right. So, whoops, back up. So, various things with treatment of OSA. I want to cover the oral appliances most because that's what you're here for. So, this is positional therapy. So, this is if somebody had a problem that only happened on their back, and I've had patients that only had sleep apnea on their back. So, keep them off their back. Okay? So, this is a tennis ball t-shirt. So, you sew a sleeve in the t-shirt and put tennis balls in it. This is called the Parker Snore Cushion. I don't think that exists anymore. But good luck rolling onto your back with that thing on your back, right? Very effective. So I have patients that will use this. So this is CPAP. All right. Who in here is on CPAP? Okay, good. You like it? No. Oh, good. Good. So you wear it. You tolerate it. Have you tried an oral appliance?
No.
No, all right. Who likes our CPAP? Good? Good. It's okay. Good. So CPAP works. CPAP blows air up the nose. When in doubt, pressurize the snout. Okay? CPAP creates a pneumatic opening of the airway. So you blow air up the nose, and it keeps the airway open with this pillar of air. Now here's kind of a bummer with CPAP, is when you do a sleep study, for those of you who are on CPAP, they wired you up again in the lab, and they put the CPAP on, and then they turned it up until it worked, okay? And the holy grail of a CPAP titration is getting you to roll over on your back and go into REM sleep. Okay, why is that? So REM sleep, all the muscles relax, jaw falls back more, on your back, jaw falls back more, so that's where sleep apnea is its worst, okay? So that's what they're looking for. And we turn that machine up until it works in supine REM. Okay, what does that mean all the rest of the time when you're not in supine REM? It's too much pressure. You don't need it. It's overkill. Does that make sense? So you need a pressure of 12, you know, when you're on your back, but when you're on your side, it's like 4. Now, there are things called auto-set CPAP machines. They're more expensive, but they will make those calculations. They'll blow as hard as necessary to keep your airway open. Yep. Yeah, if your mouth, it depends on where the uvula is, but usually most people with CPAP, they need to keep their mouth closed or the air would just go out their mouth. Okay. There are lots of different masks, things like that. Tons of different masks being created all the time. There are nasal masks, there are full face masks, there are masks that go clear around here. All sorts of different things. With the CPAP machines themselves, they're getting smaller all the time. They're really small now. They'll put like your favorite football team skin on it. They've got MP3 players built in. They got all sorts of stuff. Okay? And they're becoming quieter and easier to use all the time. Oh, excuse me. I need to cover this. So there are complications, including tooth movement. If you think, if you put this on right there, is my orthodontist still in here? There was an orthodontist in the earlier class. Where are you? Oh, there you are. So could putting this pressure on, especially if you strap those down, could that have an effect on the anterior teeth? Yeah. So you put orthodontic pressure on those front teeth. So people will come in on CPAP, your patients, and they will say, I'm hitting on my front teeth. And you're like, oh, weird. Wonder why that is. Ask them if they're on CPAP, because it will orthodontically move their teeth. So if you want to avoid that, you might have to put them in a retainer or in a NiCard type of thing to try to protect or strengthen this area so the mass doesn't push their teeth back. And no one ever talks to them about tooth problems, tooth movement with CPAP. That's never brought up. Okay? Okay, surgery. Various surgeries. I don't really want to cover any of these other than this one. So the pillar procedure is marketed sometimes to dentists. It was marketed really hard for a few years, and then I think they've kind of backed off on it. But what this is you just put these pillars that are Gore-Tex into the soft palate. And the nice thing about this surgery is it's reversible. So if the patient hates it, you can take them out. Okay? Whereas the patient that you cut off their uvula, what's the uvula there for? Why do we have one? To keep milk from coming out your nose. That's why we have a uvula, right? Or anything else you drink. So the uvula goes up when you swallow and keeps stuff from coming into your nose. So if you don't have it, then stuff goes up your nose. And that can be a bummer, right? For a lot of people. So this procedure, you can do this, and then if you're like, ooh, I hate this. I hate how it feels, I hate how I swallow, then you can have it reversed, okay? This is trach, works every time. Most people don't like it, but it does work. Mandibular advancement surgery. In the medical field, this is called bimandibular advancement. We call it orthognathic surgery, right? So with orthognathic surgery, the typical is about 12 millimeters. That's a long ways. I don't know that everybody has 12 millimeters of slack in their inferior alveolar nerve. Okay, but that's kind of the normal procedure. So we move everything forward. That has a really good effect on the airway. It's about a 95% treatment of sleep apnea is orthognathic surgery. A little expensive, $30,000 to $35,000 for orthognathic surgery, and not including ortho or any other stuff like that that goes involved, but works. If I get people in my practice that are in their 20s or 30s and they are retronathic and they have sleep apnea, I recommend this because it could be a cure for them, not a treatment. The other things we're doing, CPAP, oral appliances, are treatments. How long do the patients have to use them? Forever, okay, unless their problem's weight-related or something like that. So this would be a cure. Now, they may get sleep apnea later in life as their tissues get floppier, okay, but it could be at least a cure for a while. All right, dentistry's role. How much time we got? 45 minutes, we're good. So, obstructive sleep apnea is a life-threatening medical disorder. Dentists aren't medically qualified or legally permitted to diagnose sleep disorders. Diagnosis must be made by a physician. So again, I've treated, 5,000-6,000 people-ish. I've never diagnosed sleep apnea in anybody. I've sent tons of people to sleep doctors, tons of family members that have been diagnosed. I don't diagnose sleep apnea. It's not my job. Okay? I just refer. So what do? We screen and refer. We provide monitoral appliance therapy, and we treat these people forever. Again, how long does a person, if you fit them with an oral appliance, how long do they have to wear that oral appliance? Forever. Okay, so now let me cover a little financial aspect of this. This is for fun, because, you know, there's no money, there's no mission, right? So most of us are in business to make profit and stuff like that. What do you do in your practice? I'll pick on you. What do you do in your practice that you charge $2,000 to $3,000 for, that insurance will pay for, and they'll pay for it to be replaced every 5 years, and when you replace it every 5 years, the patient's not mad about it? Nothing. Okay, when I said the 5 years thing, some of you thought crowns. Okay, now what would happen if you had a patient come in, and if you in your practice, you started doing, you're like, hey, good news, that crown we placed, back here, we did that 5 years ago. Your insurance will pay for a new one. So we're going to cut that off today and put on a new one. Patient's like, super. No, the patient will be like, well, is it something wrong? Oh, no. No, 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 your insurance will just pay for a new one. Isn't that awesome? I think I'm going to get another dentist. Right? And none of you would do that anyway. That would be like unethical, right? Oh, well, it's perfectly good, but I'm just going to take it off. And I wouldn't do that. Oral appliance for sleep apnea, on the other hand, these people come in and I say, hey, you know what? Your appliance is doing pretty good. I know you've been wearing this thing like every night for 5 years. So we can make you another one, and then you can keep your new one in your overnight bag, or your old one in your overnight bag and wear the new one. Oh, heck yeah, let's do that. I have patients with four appliances because I've been doing this for a while. Okay? They love it. You know, rarely does a patient say, no, thanks. Okay, because it's not that much money for them to get a new one, and they won't go. Imagine if you're wearing one of these things and you lose it. Okay? The dog eats it. It breaks. Okay, this is a problem. Okay? Because you aren't sleeping and you know what it's like to sleep. So when your patient has that problem, they're like, oh, you know, this broke. And you're like, oh, no big deal. We'll get it fixed. It'll be back in 3 weeks. Just think to yourself, when you say those words out loud, remember Jameson Spencer saying, hey, doctor, just don't sleep for the next 3 weeks. Okay? So have some compassion there with the patient. So they take this very seriously once they get used to wearing this. This becomes a big deal to them. Those of you on CPAP, same thing. You know, if you had a problem with your CPAP, you would want to fix right this second. Okay, not later. How do we screen? We're looking for snoring. We're looking for non-restorative sleep. Fatigue, in women we'll particularly say fatigue. Comorbidities, blood pressure issues, GERD. Headaches, particularly temporal headaches, which is clenching the teeth. And bruxism and jaw problems, okay? Anytime you start seeing those now, I want you to immediately start thinking, I wonder if it's sleep apnea, okay? Been dealing with bruxism forever, right? Start to think maybe a little bit differently. There are some screening tests and forms that you can use. I can send you this one. That's the Epworth Sleepiness Scale. This is the Stop Bang. We've put this together on a form. I can send you one that doesn't have any letterhead or stuff on it, and you can use this. This has some dental stuff, not dental stuff, but it has some extra questions. So this is the Epworth Sleepiness Scale here. This is the Stop Bang here. And then up here it says, have you ever been diagnosed with OSA? Are you currently being treated for OSA? Are you aware of a family history of OSA? Are you aware of clenching or grinding your teeth at night? Let me cover those. Okay, so how many of you have been diagnosed with OSA? Raise your hand. Okay, everyone look around. Oh, raise your hand. Look around. Okay, diagnosed with OSA. Okay, good. Let's go to the next one. Are you currently being treated for OSA? Raise your hand. Okay, about the same group. Okay, are you aware of a family history of OSA? Okay, a few of you. All right. So now, let me ask one more question, which isn't on this form. How many of you know someone with sleep apnea? Raise your hand. Okay, almost the whole room. So some of this, sometimes, it's just a conversation. Well, I don't think I've got it, but man, my neighbor is always complaining about his CPAP machine. You know, have him call me. Okay, almost everybody knows somebody with this problem. Almost everybody. Okay, this last question. Are you aware of clenching and grinding your teeth at night? Okay, from my TMD lecture this morning, this will be a repeat, but we ask, are you aware of clenching and grinding your teeth at night instead of do you? Because if I say, do you clench and grind your teeth at night, and you say, no, now we have an argument, right? So any of you doing that now in your practice, which you do, you see tooth wear, right? And then you say, do you clench and grind your teeth? And the patient's like, no. And you're like, yes, you do. Let me show you with my real camera. And the patient's like, no, you jerk. I said I don't. I'm with myself 24 hours a day. You're just trying to sell me something. So you don't do it that way. You say, are you aware of clench or grind your teeth at night? And the patient says, no, I'm not aware of that. Well, let me show you here. I think you do, or maybe you did once upon a time, or blah, 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 blah. Okay, make sense? Okay, then this has the Epworth and the stopping. Now, even though I give you on this scoring, I couldn't care less. So if I have somebody who marks nose, but like they write down here that they fall asleep while they're reading and that they snore, that's enough for me. Okay, I'm just looking for stuff to be anything marked on this to then have a conversation with the patient to correlate with what I see in their mouth. Don't get caught up with, well, their Epworth was only 10, and that's considered normal, so you must not have it. Bull. I have people with really bad sleep apnea that have really low Epworth sleepiness scale scores. Okay, because again, this asks you how likely you to fall asleep in these situations. Most of you women in the room would mark zeros on all those. But if I said, how often do you feel fatigued? You'd be like, well, every day. But I don't go home and take a nap, because I can't, because I got to get home from work and got to take the kid to soccer practice and got to do this and this, 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 and this. I can't take a nap, even if I wanted to, right? Yep. Yes. Yeah, so if sleep apnea is untreated, it can, the comorbidities there of hypertension, all those things, the odds ratios are much higher for stroke and heart attack.
So now, if the patient has some of these, should they be screened for the other versus?
Well, again, since they're comorbidities, you would want to be treating the sleep apnea for sure. There are some cardiologists that will 100% demand that the patient's treated for sleep apnea or they won't treat the patient. Like, I'm not going to waste my time with you because you're going to die anyway, so let's get your sleep apnea under control. No, seriously. Okay? It'd be like a periodontist, you know, treating a patient. The patient's like, well, I'm not going to brush and floss. Okay, then really no reason for you to come here, right? Okay, exam in the dental office. We do our exam here. I'll blow through some of this stuff. So I'm just hitting this over and over again so it gets in your nervous system here. If you can't see down the throat, scalping on the borders of the tongue, I haven't covered that yet. This is the tongue trying to escape. Okay? It's the tongue trying to escape out of the mouth. You see the scalping on the borders of the tongue. Big tongues, can't see down the throat. Bruxism, again, anterior wear, you should never see the same again. You should see that and immediately say, do you snore? And you'll get all these thin women that are like, yeah, why would you ask that? Well, because I see it on your teeth. Okay, if they're missing a bunch of teeth, you'd need to choose a specific appliance. I'll cover that in just a second. We get study casts with bite registrations. This I will spend just a second on here because this is important. If you start treating patients with sleep apnea, and by the way, my number one recommendation for getting started in this is start with yourself, your family members, your staff, and their family members. And tell them up front, I suck at this. I've done none. Okay? You're my first ones. I'm treating you for free because you're my family and you're my staff and you're my staff's family. Okay? But don't expect a miracle. And here's the thing. If I treat you, you must come back for follow-up. You must come back. You must tell me what's going on. If you give up wearing the appliance, you pay for it. $2,000 a pop. Okay? I'll swipe your credit card. If you do not come in for follow-up, I'm going to charge you. You come in for follow-up, it's free. Do that. Get started. And then after you've treated 10, 15 people, now you can let yourself loose on your patient base. All right? And you can do that really rapidly because you go back to your practice and there's someone in that practice that snores, has a husband that snores, you know, they will be beating down your door to get treated. All right? So, in doing that, you're going to take impressions, and I recommend you take polyvinyl siloxane impressions and keep them forever so that you have a record of pre-treatment. Okay, so I keep my impressions on all my patients forever or until they die. Okay, not for 7 years. It's not a board of dentistry thing. It's till they die because I always want to be able to go back and go, okay, well, before we treated you, here's where everything was. And now here's where it is now. And I can kind of see what happened. You must have something to go back to or you have no idea what's going on. Okay, have any of you ever given, so any of you do splint therapy, like lower splints and stuff? Have you ever given a patient a splint and they come in and they say, look, doc, my teeth are crooked now and they didn't used to be. Okay, and you got a splint that like covers all their teeth. Their teeth weren't crooked. Their teeth weren't made crooked by your splints. They just never looked at their teeth until they started taking this piece of plastic off and on their teeth all the time. Okay, so have records, have a bite registration in their normal bite, their habitual bite, and then you'll take records in your treatment position too. I love getting a cone beam CT on my patients. I can't all the time because they can't all afford it. Okay, so I don't all the time, but I like to. I get a panel on everybody. This is the George gauge, again, out of scope of this lecture to go over this in detail, but this is just something we can use to take a bite record of the jaw in a protruded position. There are other things available that we can use too. Imaging, again, get a pano. Nice to have a cone beam if you've got it. And then you can look at the airway too. This is my airway, just to show you what oral appliances do. I would never do this to a patient. I'm not pro imaging people, just for the heck of it. Okay, so this is me. So this is my normal airway with my teeth together, and this is with an old TAP 2 appliance. They don't even make this one anymore. But look at the change in my jaw position. So here, that overlap to end, and check out the change in my airway. So double the airway. Okay, so does this mean double the airflow? Or is it more than that? Four times, right? Yeah. So just a little change can make a huge difference. And check it out too. I mean, here my tongue is all the way up plastered against my palate, and here it's not at all. So if I would have put my tongue in the right position, that would have even opened it up more. This was published in 95. It basically says oral appliances are a useful alternative, and, you know, oral appliances are okay. Okay, and this, I was doing this back in the late 90s and early 2000s, and it was just like, you know, if you got nothing else, an oral appliance is okay. Okay, then, in 2006, February of 2006, even though it says 2005, this was published, and this changed the whole game. So the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, the sleep doctors, published this, practice parameters for treatment of strenuous sleep apnea with oral appliances. This changed the whole rules. So they say oral appliances are indicated patients with mild to moderate OSA who prefer them to CPAP. So that means anybody. It's like, well, I would prefer that to CPAP. Great, there you go, it's indicated. Who don't respond to, aren't appropriate candidates for, or who fail treatment attempts with CPAP. So if you try CPAP and can't use it, mild to moderate sleep apnea, boom, oral appliance. This does not say that the AASM says that oral appliances are the preferred treatment in mild to moderate sleep apnea. Some of you may be marketed to by groups that try to sell you stuff that will say that. That's not true. That's not what this says. Okay, it just says mild to moderate, oral appliance, CPAP, either one, it's good to go. Okay? Till there's higher quality evidence, CPAP is indicated whenever possible for patients with severe OSA before considering OAs. Does this say you can't treat severe sleep apnea with an oral appliance? No. It just says they should try CPAP first, whenever possible. Okay? You need to know these guidelines, because you will come up against insurance companies and sometimes doctors who don't know this stuff, and you'll have to educate them on it. Because they'll be like, well, I'm not paying for that, because they have severe sleep apnea. You're like, well, Trach already tried CPAP, so what do you suggest, insurance company? Trach? You're going to do Trach? Or orthognathic surgery? Which one? And the insurance company will be like, that's a good question. Okay, so then you provide them with this information. No, this is all medical. Yeah, it's always covered by medical insurance. Appliance is always medical. Yeah, this is always medical. So other reasons you might use an oral appliance is an adjunct to CPAP. So those of you on CPAP and you're like, hey, I like my CPAP. Well, maybe you don't like traveling with your CPAP. Okay, because you got to take it out for the bomb squad at the TSA. That's a hassle. Is anyone in here TSA? Oh. So the perfect situation here. Is anyone in here TSA pre and use a CPAP? You are? TSA pre and CPAP? Do you have to take it out? Oh, you don't. You are? Does he have to take it out even though he's TSA pre? So there you go. See? So TSA pre is awesome. If you aren't TSA pre, you should pay your $85 and become TSA pre. So that's like back in the olden days. You leave on your jacket and your shoes and you just walk through. Okay, but if you have a CPAP machine, you got to take it out of your stupid bag. Otherwise, your bag just stays in there and you go, and it's a wonderful world. Okay, so there you go. If you have, if you're on CPAP, you might get an oral appliance just for that. Because you don't have to take your oral appliance out. I tell my patients, you can use this if you want to. I have my little appliance here. And I say, this is an oral appliance. No masks, no hoses, no machine. This is packing for a trip. I don't necessarily recommend that they keep it in their pocket, but the visual there, they're like, wow, that's awesome. Okay, for people who've been on CPAP, this is magic. Like, what? You gotta be kidding me. That's it? Okay, and that's it. This is the whole thing. By the way, if you do have like nice things like this, I have a lab, we can make you stuff like this if you want. Make sure you take the appliance off of these because a lot of patients think this is the appliance. Like this whole thing. No kidding. Do not think as a dentist because a dentist looks at this, obviously there's a typhoid on, blah, blah, blah. The patient's like, damn, that's big. I got to put that whole thing in my mouth? Just this part. Combination with CPAP. Oh, excuse me. Like hunting and stuff. I'm from Idaho, a lot of hunters. So they don't like taking their CPAP machine because then they got to take a generator and all this other stuff. I have a sneaking suspicion that almost all hunting accidents are not accidents. I think it's Bubba after like day four in elk camp that he was snoring and there was high-powered weapons and beer. And one night, there was an accident. And he got pulled out in the woods somewhere, right? So don't let that happen to your patients. Combination with CPAP, and I'll show that, but we use oral appliances with CPAP a lot, and we can lower the pressures. Because if we, again, I told you, they turn up the CPAP to basically blow the jaw forward when the person's laying on their back in REM sleep. So if you can keep the jaw from falling back with an oral appliance, we don't have to turn up the CPAP so hard. Make sense? All right. Compliance with local licensing. There's some states that get all over this. Most of you in California, I believe, when you fill out your malpractice insurance stuff, it probably asks you if you treat snoring or sleep apnea without a referral from a physician, right? Okay, so don't think you're safe if it's like, well, I'm just treating snoring. I'm not treating sleep apnea. How do you know you're not treating sleep apnea? Okay, if you have a patient that comes in, it's like, hey, doc, can you just treat me for my snoring? As long as you don't mind that your license and your practice is on the line, go for it. It's probably worth $500, right? Not to me. So I will treat snoring if a medical doctor says, go ahead, Dr. Spencer, treat the snoring. Okay? So if I got a patient, he's like, doc, I just want you to treat my snoring. Here's what I do. I'll give you the secret sauce to how to do this. I call the family doctor. Okay, now who did I say I send all my patients to? Sleep doctor. If you call a sleep doctor and ask him about treating this patient snoring, what's the sleep doctor going to say? As long as you want to lose your license, go right ahead. What's a family doctor probably going to say, though? Yeah, go ahead. Okay, or they may say, well, no, you know what? This guy's got hypertension and stuff like that. He might need a sleep study. So what you do, if you have the patient who wants you to treat him for snoring, you call up family doctor. Hey, family doc, I got a patient in. I see these signs and symptoms. I think he may have sleep apnea. I'm not sure. But he's got really bad snoring. I wanted to talk to you. What do you think? I can make him an oral appliance. We can see how it does. We can get him in for a sleep study. Your call, doc. And then the family doctor says, boy, good job, dentist. I think you picked up on something. I think this guy's got probably has sleep apnea. I'm getting him into a sleep lab. Cool. Or, wow, good job, dentist. You know what? Why don't we just start with an oral appliance and see how it does? Probably won't hurt him, right? Let's just start with that. Maybe we'll decide on a sleep study down the road. Okay. And then you write in your chart. Spoke to the Dr. Blank MD. He said blah, 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 blah. Okay? Do not do it by yourself or you are totally putting yourself out and no one will be able to help you. I write that in the chart. Not necessarily. If you're treating sleep apnea, you for sure need a written referral. Okay? If you're treating sleep apnea, always a written referral. All right. So CPAP, that's how it works. Oral appliance work like that. There's my airway again. Okay, now we're going to get into oral appliances. The whole reason you guys sat here for all this time, talk about oral appliances. I'm just spending the last couple minutes. Okay, design variations. There's different types of oral appliances. I'm going to go over several of kind of the most popular. Tongue retaining devices. These are affectionately referred to as turds. Turds. Okay. And tongue retaining devices are good for people who don't have teeth, although my edentulous patients never like them. The best reason for a TRD is people with Down syndrome because they have big tongues, and so you kind of need to get the tongue out of the mouth, and that's what these things do. So this is the Snorex. You stick your tongue in this sleeve. You pinch it, and it sucks your tongue forward, and then this thing is outside your lip, so it pulls your tongue forward. This is one that's custom made. This is one with breathing tubes. I didn't put in the one by Glidewell. You've all seen that, the tongue stabilization orthotic, TSO, same thing. You can try that. Mandibular repositioner. So these are so-called non-adjustable. This is one of the original ones called the Napa. That George gauge thing I showed, Peter George, he invented this appliance. And that's why he had to have the George gauge. It was because he had to take the record exactly in the right spot because he had a one-piece acrylic appliance. Now, for those of you who are at least as old as I am, could you adjust this appliance? Think clinically here a little bit. Think lab. So back in dental school for you young guys, we used to do lab work. You'd have to like wax crowns and stuff and cast them and like make things and stuff. I know you don't do that anymore, but we used to. Could you adjust this? Yes, with a separating disc and acrylic. That's how you adjust it. Okay, so some of the new manufacturers will be like, well, that's not adjustable. That's not a good appliance. Sure, it's adjustable with a separating disc and a bottle of acrylic. It's not easily adjustable, I'll give you that, but it's still adjustable. If an adjustable appliance is in the right spot, and this is in the right spot, which one's superior? Neither. As a matter of fact, I would almost vote that this is superior, because if you have them both in the right spot, the adjustable appliance now has the ability to go into the wrong spot, whereas this one is in the right spot. So sometimes I will make my adjustable appliances non-adjustable after I know it's in the right spot. Okay? Yeah? Does it open their bite? Yeah, because it's between their teeth. You mean, does it change their bite? I'll talk about changing the bite in a minute. Who is looking for that the thermoplastic appliance? Is that you? No. Anyway, this is a thermoplastic appliance. This is a boil and bite appliance called the TheraSnore. This is the SnoreGuard. A lot of dentists say, oh, I'm just making my patients a SnoreGuard. SnoreGuard is a brand name appliance. Okay, so they use that term like Kleenex. Okay, but this is a real thing. I have one patient that uses a SnoreGuard. She's a OB-GYN, and she came in to me and had a SnoreGuard. And I'm like, I'm not using a SnoreGuard. What kind of crappy dentist am I? I'm going to make you a custom appliance. So I made her a nice custom appliance, and guess what? She hated it. So I fit her with a freaking SnoreGuard. It's a boil and bite. But I was thinking, oh, no self-respecting dentist like myself, a professional in the field, would use a crappy boil and bite. She loved it. Okay? Okay, is some appliance, if an appliance works, that's the best appliance. It's not about how much it costs, not about what it's made of, it's not if it's adjustable or not. It's, does it work or not? Can the patient tolerate it? She loves this. She's on like her fifth one now, because they don't last that long. But they're cheap, $50. Okay, if you want to make yourself an appliance when you get back to your office, here you go. Two suck downs, put some acrylic between it. Bring your jaw forward a little bit. Voila. Okay? Just saved yourself a $500 lab bill. Adjustable appliances. Okay, I take appliances and put them in categories of how they work. So there's anterior point stop appliances, pushing appliances that push the jaw forward, pulling appliances that pull the jaw forward, monoblocks that are one piece, interlocking that have fins, the Oasis, which is unique, and then temporary appliances. Okay? So when you're thinking about an oral appliance, think about the mechanics of how it brings the jaw forward or keeps the jaw from falling backwards. Okay? All oral appliances do the same thing. It's just how they do it. So different mechanisms of action may be good for different people. Okay? So let me ask you a question. What burr do you use in your practice? 330? That's the burr you use for everything? Crown preps? No, you use a 330 for crown preps? Endo access? Use a 330 for everything? No, of course not. You use more than one burr? You do? Oh, okay. Okay. You guys have been a great crowd because usually when I give this lecture, within about 15 minutes, I'm talking about, you know, stage 3 sleep or something, and someone's like, which appliance do you use? Just get to the freaking point. Which appliance do you use? I just want to know which appliance, and I'm out of here. Okay? Don't be that guy. So I believe you should all have 4 or 5 appliances that you're comfortable with, just like you probably have more than one burr that you use in your practice. You'll need 4 or 5 appliances that you're comfortable with. Okay, there's 130 FDA-approved appliances to choose from, so it shouldn't be that hard. So find 4 or 5 that you like. You should try them, wear them. Everything I'm about to show you, I've worn. Okay, I can wear any of them. They all work on me. Okay, I don't brux laterally at all. Okay, so I'm kind of an easy patient. All right, so let's go through these. And to your point stop is the tap appliance. So this is up front. So this is going to put all the pressure, basically, right here. So someone who has perio on 8 and 9, this may not be the best choice. Okay, and I've had some patients with some negative outcomes, with their teeth, that is, wearing this appliance. Okay, because back 10 years ago, it's kind of all I had, was the tap. Okay, but it's a good appliance. This is nice because it pulls the jaw joints forward any way they want to come forward, because it goes from an anterior point stop. So if the right jaw wants to come forward a little bit more than the left, it's fine. The other appliances I show you will make an assumption that the jaw joints want to come together the same on both sides, which isn't always the case. This one comes from the middle, so it lets the jaw come however it wants. This is a push appliance. So it's pushing from the upper second molars, basically, down to the canine area. Okay? So someone who's maybe missing upper back teeth, this would not be the best choice, because it would be unstable. This is a Herbst appliance, right? And this is a good appliance. The only problem with this appliance is if you open your mouth, it just falls open. So oftentimes you have to use elastics to keep the mouth closed. This is a pull appliance. This is the Silent Night and the EMA. Now this appliance, the Silent Night, made by Glidewell, is the most prescribed appliance for snoring in the country. Why? Because it's the most marketed appliance in the country. Now, any self-respecting dental sleep medicine expert such as myself would never use a Silent Night. And I never have, because I'm a snob. Okay? All of us are snobs. We would never use this. But can this appliance be absolutely effective? Of course it can. Okay? And now they've made it easier to adjust. These things are a pain in the butt to adjust. But now they've made it easy. So it's fine. Okay? You don't have posterior support, but otherwise it can be a very good appliance. Yeah? Might break them, that's right. It's actually not forcing their jaw back. I'll explain that in just a second. Okay? EMA, I will put wear my heart on my sleeve here. This is my favorite appliance. Not for everybody, but it's one of my favorite appliances because these things are elastic. So it gives. Alright? So when people, like this gentleman said, she was trying to force her jaw backwards. Not necessarily. So if you've got an appliance in your mouth and it's not protecting your airway, what will you do? You'll fight it because it's trying to kill you. So you'll fight the appliance and you might break it. I would rather have the appliance break than the patient break. You follow me? I would rather have the appliance break than the patient break. If the patient is fighting this appliance, it stretches out the bands. Worst case scenario, it pops these buttons off. But the patient doesn't break. With this appliance, called a dorsal fin appliance, I'll show on the next slide here, if they're fighting it, my first indication that they're fighting it is it breaks. That's the only way I know. I can't tell otherwise. With the EMA, I know because they come in and their bands are stretched out like crazy. Or I ask them, how long does it take to stretch those out? 2 days. Okay, something's going on. Okay, so think about that. Don't just think as a dentist of, I want the hardest, strongest appliance in there so when they brux, they can't break it. You ever notice how you are marketed to on that? The hardest materials, Bruxer and this, we're just going to put diamond hard materials in the mouth so that they can't break it. No one's asking why are they trying to break it. They're trying to break it because they're trying to breathe. And air is more important than veneers to the brain. So it's not about how hard the material is. If you have their airway protected, it won't matter how hard the material is because they won't have to try to break it. Does that make sense? Okay, that's a pull. Adjustable monoblock, this is the Moses, lots of tongue space here. That's a good appliance. This is interlocking appliances. This is the Somnamed or Somnadent Respire. This is called the mRNA. This is the dorsal like I've got up there on the front. They all work the same way. So this is, comment on this. So this one's a little bit tough for someone who likes to go side to side because you can't. This appliance kind of the same way. This is a wonderful appliance though in people that are missing several teeth or over dentures. This is my go-to appliance over dentures. I'll fit this to the denture. Speaking of dentures, if you have someone with sleep apnea who has dentures, what should be your first comment to them? Or first question? Do you sleep with your dentures in? They say, no, doc, you've been telling me for 25 years not to sleep with my dentures in. Okay, I was wrong. Go sleep with your dentures in. because your airway is more important than your gum tissue. And you can take your dentures out during the day when your airway is protected during the day and let them have a break during the day. Does that make sense? So, because imagine, again, with everything we just discussed here, can you ever imagine a scenario where taking out all of your vertical improves your airway? Nope. So for some of my patients, that was it. That was their treatment. They went to the sleep lab, no dentures, because they never wear their dentures to sleep. We put in their dentures, put it back to the sleep lab, no sleep apnea. Okay? Piece of cake. This is the Oasis. This has little things to help you breathe through your nose. This is a gentleman up in the San Francisco area. And these are your temporary trial appliances. This is the Z Quiet online. This is the Pure Sleep. This is the one I invented called the Easy Airway by Shine. Your patients can get these online. They can't get them at Walmart because all oral appliances for sleep apnea are prescription only. They're all prescription only. So they can only buy it online. Okay, and there's some dude here in California, maybe you're in the room, probably not, that prescribes these for all the patients, this Pure Sleep. Okay, and if the Board of Dentistry ever comes to him and says, dude, you're prescribing patients that you've never seen before, he'll say, here's my license, I'll be on my private island. Thank you very much. Because 500,000 of these were sold last year. 500,000 of the Pure Sleep last year. SomniMed, to put it in perspective, 3 years ago, fit their 100,000th appliance worldwide since the inception of the company. Sales pitch, here's my appliance. It's called the Silent Sleep. So this is a temporary appliance that you might use just to do something quick. You can write that down if you want. MySilentSleep.com is the website. All right. Combination therapy. There are different things we can do to help people use their CPAP. This is called the CPAP Pro. This is another thing to help use nasal pillows and an oral appliance simultaneously. This is the TAP-PAP. This is a TAP appliance connected to an acrylic mask that I made. I took an impression of the patient's face and made an acrylic mask. This woman's treated at Stanford. That's the only thing that works for her. She ended up getting orthognathic surgery, though. Now, having done stuff like this, which is a total hassle and a lot of work, I grew up eventually and decided that there's an easier way to do things, okay, which is this. So whatever oral appliance you feel is appropriate for the patient, I don't mean this one specifically, but whatever one, and whatever CPAP mask works, that's the best combination therapy, not the stuff I showed you on the previous five slides. Okay, because this, their insurance will pay for about every 5 years. This, their insurance will pay for every 3 to 6 months to get a new mask. Why fight that? Okay, so that's how I do combination therapy now. Whatever the best CPAP treatment is, whatever the best oral appliance is. Okay, complications, side effects. We talked a little bit, or there was a question about occlusal changes. Okay, again, how many of you wear an oral appliance for sleep apnea? Raise your hand. Raise your hand high. Okay. Up high again, please. Look around, everybody. Okay. How many of you, go ahead and keep your hands up. I want to see how many fall. How many of you is your bite totally normal immediately when you take your appliance out in the morning? Take your hand down. Okay, yours is? Oh, yours is not either. Okay, so none of you, is it normal in the morning? No, and it wouldn't be. Okay, you hold your jaw forward in any position for 4, 5, 6 hours, that's where your jaw's going to go. Okay, because that's the new muscular position you put it in. So your jaw's going to take a while to come back. There are different ways that you can work with this. This is what I recommend you teach your patients. To avoid occlusal-related side effects, they should floss their teeth every day. You're like, oh, well, I ask all my patients to do that. Flossing the teeth, they will know the space between the teeth. If it starts to change, then they should call you. And that's when you go back to your records that you took before you started anything, and you make Invisalign-type trays to try to pull things back together. The most common cause of tooth movement changes is that the appliance was made and does not cap behind the second molar. Otherwise, theoretically, the teeth shouldn't move. They still will, but theoretically, they shouldn't. Usually, that's the case, though. The other one is they check their bites every night. Okay? So for most of you that wear an appliance, how long does it take for your bite to come back to normal? 10 minutes. Others? Anyone longer than an hour? Okay, it takes me about 30, 45 minutes for my bite to go back to normal with my appliance. I make no effort to get it to go back. I have my breakfast, and then it's back to normal. So what I want you to do is you have your patient every night when they brush their teeth, tap their teeth together, look in the mirror, and they should feel their teeth hitting on the back teeth. Everything should be the same from night to night. If it's always the same every night, it's probably not changing that dramatically. If they ignore this, their jaw will come forward and it won't go back. Okay? Because there's a reason for that. And that is the TMJ stuff. Okay? So people with disc displacements, when you bring their jaw forward and they're on the disc, the jaw wants to stay forward. It's a better position for the jaw. It's a better position for the muscles, better position for everything. So it doesn't want to go back. Okay, so there's certain things you need to look for or that you need to be comfortable with, TMJ-wise, to understand what's going on. Okay, so to answer your question in the back row, can oral appliances change people's bites? Absolutely. About a third of the time, it makes it better, as in they go from class 2, div 1, to not class 2 anymore, and they have occlusion. The most difficult or the easiest people to come forward and not notice are class 3. If they start out here, and they come forward a little bit, their back teeth still touch. So those people, you have to teach them to look and make sure that everything's flush every night. Okay? Class 2, div 2, on the other hand, they may come forward because their jaw is in a better spot, but they will notice because they will be open in the back a mile. Does that make sense? Because they got no room to come forward. So they will usually complain. All right. So potential problems, I just mentioned that on the disc displacement. We get people back annually for follow-up. We replace the appliances every 3 to 5 years. And remember, this is lifetime therapy. All right, I think I'm wrapping up here. So my standard protocol is I get a referral from a doctor. So this is my practice, my limited sleep practice. I get a referral from the doctor. I do an exam. I get records. I fit the appliance. I follow up. I do follow-up objective studies sometimes. I refer them back to their sleep doctor for consideration of follow-up PSG. We titrate or adjust our appliances in the lab. Okay? I've taught all the sleep techs where I work to adjust the appliances in the lab. So we know exactly the right spot. If you get into this, again, work with me and I can teach you how to do that. Okay? We then get them back, alter the appliance, and we do a long-term follow-up. Here's how you might do things. Start screening your patients immediately for bruxism, snoring, and sleep apnea. Start immediately screening them. Maybe, in some cases, you might treat your patient with a temporary appliance for their bruxism. Maybe. Or you just refer them to a sleep doctor for consideration of a sleep study. But remember, if you're going to fit them with an oral appliance, temporarily, it's for bruxism. It's not for sleep. It's not for snoring. It's for bruxism. Does that make sense? Okay. Follow up with the patient for creation of a long-term plan. Okay. In conclusion, sleep apnea is a serious health concern with a high prevalence in our society. Dentists can play an important role in the diagnosis and treatment of sleep disorder breathing. Oral appliances are useful in the treatment of sleep disorder breathing and are often better tolerated than CPAP. Can be used adjunctive to CPAP or in combination with CPAP. And most importantly, you can do it. So, to wrap up here again, if you want me to send you this stuff, there's some stuff up here. I really, really, really strongly believe that as dentists, we are the best physicians of the airway to be referring people for sleep studies. Okay? Also, I happen to believe that oral appliances are the best treatment for mild to moderate sleep apnea. I really do. Because oftentimes CPAP in those patients, especially mild sleep apnea, CPAP, the treatment is worse than the disease. So an oral appliance is a piece of cake. And usually all we have to do is keep the jaw from falling backwards. We don't have to jack them that far forward. So here's my email address. You can shoot me an email. My website, I don't have it on there, but it's jamisonspencer.com. jamisonspencer.com. My email has an R in it, but my website's just jamisonspencer.com. And you can find out more about stuff there and how to continue education. Thank you very much. Hope you have a great rest of your time here.